some of the poorest children in the country. That is $3 billion out of a tax rise of $26 billion. And of course, the fiscal problems that the country faces are caused by the hat-trick of horrors, Boris Johnson being in charge for COVID, Brexit and austerity. So if you were in the business of punting those three things, if you were essentially in hock to wealth and the Tories who brought the country to its knees, who would you be going after today? Spoiler alert, it's the most vulnerable children in the country.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the Chancellor has admitted to LBC that her budget tax rises will impact working people, but stressed they're fair and necessary. Rachel Reeves announced tax rises totalling £26 billion a year by 2030 yesterday. The Conservatives say she should resign for breaking a promise not to come back for more taxes. But speaking to LBC this morning, Ms Reeves says other measures will ease that burden.
We are taxing the gambling companies a bit more while we're asking people in expensive properties to pay a bit more. Next year, we are taking £150 off of everyone's bills, whether you're a pensioner or somebody that goes out to work every day. And I recognise that the cost of living is still people's biggest concern.
Net migration to the UK has fallen to its lowest level since 2021. The Office for National Statistics says the figure stood at 204,000 in the year to June. That's down from 649,000, a drop of 69% from the year before. The drop's been put down to, in part, fewer people arriving here for work or to study from outside of the EU. The United States has stopped processing immigration requests from Afghan nationals after two National Guard soldiers were shot in Washington, D.C. The victims are in a critical condition. President Trump says his officials are confident the suspected attacker, who's been detained, entered the U.S. from Afghanistan in 2021.
We're not going to put up with these kind of assaults on law and order by people who shouldn't even be in our country. We must now re-examine every single alien who has entered our country from Afghanistan under Biden, and we must take all necessary measures to ensure the removal of any alien from any country who does not belong here.
More than 50 people are now known to have been killed in a fire in a block of flats in Hong Kong. Hundreds of others are still missing. Officials have announced a criminal investigation is now underway. And a panel of experts are expected to decide later whether to recommend a screening programme for prostate cancer in the UK. The advice will be considered by the government. Former Prime Minister Lord Cameron is among those calling for men to be checked for the disease. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was down 20 at 96.71. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.14. LBC weather, rain developing across northern and western areas, cloudy but dry elsewhere, a high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
That there is a great night's sleep. And when Susan wakes up, she's going to get to enjoy a delicious unlimited breakfast. Or, if that super comfy bed is just too hard to leave, Susan can enjoy a midday checkout. Get better sleep for your money. Book now at Premier Inn. Breakfast subject to availability. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Sorry, you've interrupted a staff meeting. I'll be with you imminently. Keith, remember when we had the I told you so tin? Was that just for Brexit stuff, or could we rattle the I told you? Because I know Keith nearly retired early. I had to put so much money in the I told you so tin in the aftermath of Brexit. Was it for other stuff as well, or was it just for Brexit? It's just for Brexit, wasn't it? Because I'm afraid I'm reaching for the I told you so button again today with news that net migration has just come down to 204,000. Count them. 204,000. I mean, the word is plummeting, and I told you that this was going to happen. It wasn't a particularly perspicacious contribution to our conversations, because the evidence has been there throughout. I'll leave you to decide why it is so completely and roundly ignored by everybody who professes to be profoundly concerned about immigration. It's coming down at a rate of knots, and spoiler alert, it's going to come down further. Please don't mention that the Office of Budget Responsibility estimates that we lose about £7 billion in taxes with every 100,000 person drop in net migration. I'll say that again. If migration drops by 100,000, the Office of Budgetary Responsibility estimates that we lose about £7 billion in taxes. Because most people who come here from other countries work very hard. So if you were to add that to today's ludicrous rhetoric about the two-child benefit cap, losing 100,000 migrants costs two child benefit cap abolitions, two and a bit child benefit cap abolitions. So if you're being encouraged today, and people work very hard to encourage you to be ignorant and furious at the same time, and it's not your fault you're ignorant, it's the job of people who get paid to give you the facts, that's why you're ignorant. So if you were being encouraged today to get very, very furious about the abolition of the two-child benefit cap, you should be, by rights, two and a bit times as furious about every 100,000 drop in net migration. This isn't an opinion, this is counting. How many of the people telling you today to be furious about the cut to the abolition of the two-child benefit cap would also encourage you to be furious about a drop in immigration, a drop in net migration? I'll just leave that hanging, because we have become, my friends, a ludicrous country. We have become a ludicrous population, a truly ludicrous society. When Logan Roy turned to his own children as they battled over the inheritance of his media empire in the superlative television drama Succession and said, "You are not serious people." He was Welsh by way of East Anglia. "You are not serious people." That is what we have become. And it's not our fault. It is the fault. Was he playing an American? No, he was playing a Scot. He was still... Anyway, it doesn't matter. I'm not great at accent. "You are not serious people." It's not our fault that this has happened. I joked yesterday that two of the men paid for their opinions about budgets would be paid for their opinions about budgets today, despite the fact that... And I think this is important. If it's a bit of a hobby horse of mine and you don't find it interesting or relevant, then do let me know so that I can take your thoughts on board. I messaged yesterday these two men in 2022 when commenting upon the Truss and Kwarteng apocalypse wrote, "The best budget I have ever heard a British Chancellor deliver." That was someone called Alistair Heath at the Telegraph. Alex Brummer at the Daily Mail wrote, "Seismic, a genuine Tory package elbowing to one side the Treasury's fiscal conservatism." So you go back to September 22, when, by any account, the single worst budget or mini-budget in the history of our islands was greeted with unalloyed glee by men who are paid for their analysis and opinions. And fast forward to November 2025, and guess what? They're still getting paid. So how much weight would you set by the opinions of men who thought that Liz Truss and Kwasi Kwarteng were economic visionaries possessed of a genius not seen since the times of Ptolemy? Because that's what you're expected to do. And listen, don't tell anyone, but an awful lot of people who do what I do for a living don't have any original thoughts of their own. They wait to see what the Daily Mail and the Daily Telegraph are doing and then just regurgitate that to you over the airwaves every morning. So here are those men who thought that Liz Truss and Kwasi Kwarteng were economic visionaries, geniuses, the likes of which we only see once every 200 generations. Here they are on Rachel Reeves. First up, Alex Brummer at the Daily Mail. "She's found an orchard of magic money trees that will speed up the UK doom loop." Who wouldn't take him seriously, given his absolutely crystal clear analysis of Kwarteng and Truss? And Alistair Heath... Oh, come on then, Keith. Let's get the unhinged headline out of the archives. We haven't used it for a while, and I miss it. Do you miss it? Go on.
Unhinged headline.
"Britain is now in the grip of full-blooded socialism." That's the editor of the Sunday Telegraph listening to the same budget you listened to and concluding that private enterprise was abolished, that everything is now in the arms and the ownership of the workers. Every company operating in this country, from Morrison's to Mercedes-Benz, actually I'm not sure they do operate in this country, but anyway, all the factories, they're now owned by the workers. The means of production, it's all owned by the workers. Don't take my word for it, Alistair Heath is absolutely adamant. The country is in the grip of full-blooded socialism, and those people get paid to inform political discourse. And some people just suck it up without even pausing to breathe and regurgitate it to you. So what are we supposed to regurgitate today? Taxes have had to go up because of austerity, Brexit and Boris Johnson. Boris Johnson being in charge during COVID, which made everything worse, everything more expensive, and caused tens of thousands more deaths than we needed to endure. That's not an opinion, that's counting. Taxes had to go up because of Brexit, austerity, and Boris Johnson. Right? How much have they gone up by? £26 billion. How much of that is earmarked for the abolition of the two-child benefit cap? Presumably, listening to some of the coverage this morning, at least, oh, I don't know, 24, 25 billion, right? Because we're going after the strivers. We're going after the work... Yeah, why should I subsidise lazy, feckless, work-shy layabouts who spend all their money on flat-screen televisions and tenant super? Yeah! So how much of the 26 billion do you think is earmarked for the abolition of the two-child benefit cap? 24? Must be 24. Oh, okay, look, I'm being facetious. 20, it must be 20 billion, right? Because that's all that we're talking about today. The two-child benefit cap. Give me a call. Tell me how cross you are about the abolition of the two-child benefit cap. Yeah, 3 billion. 3 over 26, right? 3 over 20. 3 billion out of 26 billion. Also, you will not find a qualified contributor to this discourse who thinks that that's a net loss to the long-term economic health of the country. You look after the poorest children, they become much more likely to be productive citizens when they grow up. Oh, and by the way, it's about 40% of families who are on universal credit are in work. So it's not even about the unemployed. So when they're talking about the feckless, work-shy layabouts, they are not telling you that 40% of them are actually working families. The poorest children in the country. The poorest children in the country. Measurable. That's not an opinion, it's counting. Are going to be less poor. They're going to be dragged out of poverty by a tax rise that constitutes a relatively tiny fraction of the overall tax rise necessitated by, altogether now, Brexit, austerity, and Boris bloody Johnson. But what would you do? Seriously, if I'd spent the last 14 years telling you that austerity was necessary, we've got to suck it up, chaps. Austerity's a great idea. Boris Johnson, love him. He's on the show tomorrow. I'm going to tickle all his toes. I only managed to do 9 of them yesterday, last time he was here. When Boris Johnson shuffles off this political coil, Nigel Farage will be replacing him on my Christmas card list, and I'll be treating him like the second coming, or indeed the third coming. So if I'd spent 14 years telling you austerity was brilliant, Boris Johnson was a genius, Liz Truss was an economic visionary, and that Brexit was a brilliant idea, what would I be doing today? I'll tell you what I'd be doing today. I'd be resigning, actually. But if I didn't have an honest bone in my body, I'd be pretending that the reason why Rachel Reeves has had to put taxes up had nothing to do with all the things I told you to do and vote for, from Boris Johnson to Brexit to austerity. And because that's desperate and pathetic and deeply dishonest and immoral and unchristian and all the other things you can think of that we're supposed to care about in this country, I'd have to find somebody for you to attack instead. Who are you going to attack today? For the sins of Brexit, the sins of Boris Johnson, the sins of austerity, the sins of Liz Truss. Who are you going to attack? Who on earth can you attack if you're not going to attack the people responsible for the problems that you helped create? Step forward. The poorest children in the country. We're going to attack them. I mean, we might pretend that actually, no, we're attacking their parents without mentioning the fact that most of them are in families that are working. They're just not being paid enough to survive in this society where the rich get annually much, much richer. Who are you going to attack today to cover up the fact that the economic problems Rachel Reeves is charged with fixing were caused by you? You and your arrogance and your ignorance and your tabloid sensibilities dedicated to whipping up hatred of immigrants in order to drag us out of the single market and turn us in to the first population in the history of humanity to actively vote to impose economic sanctions on itself. Who are you gonna blame it on? All these things you have done. David Cameron, Boris Johnson, Liz Truss, Theresa May. Who are you gonna blame it on? All the things you did, all the toes you tickled. Who are you gonna blame it on? Well, I'm going to blame it on the poorest children in the country, obviously. Because they should be even poorer. That is the logic of 80-85% of the media coverage of Rachel Reeves' budget yesterday. I'm not here to cheer for Rachel Reeves' budget. I'm here to explain the context and the background to it. Because everybody else seems to be pouring this poison into your ear. Those children over there, the poorest children in the country, they should be even poorer. That's the only solution to the problems caused by all the things that we told you to vote for. The Brexit, the Johnson, the austerity, the Truss, albeit no one actually voted for her. So how are you going to cover that up? How are you going to paper over that hideous crack, that fissure of fraudulence? Oh, I'm going to go after the poorest children in the country. And I'm going to give you just enough camouflage, just enough khaki to pretend that what you're really going after is their parents. Just don't mention that almost half of them are in work anyway, and the ones that aren't are more likely to find work by the time this parliament ends than anyone is ever going to admit. And if that's not enough, let's just get the disabled people who've spent their own money on nice cars and ban them from having the cars that they want and forcing them to drive the cars that we think they should be driving because a couple of weirdos on Twitter got angry about it 6 months ago. And that is the country that you live in. That is the country that you live in. If I was charged with distracting you from it, I'd probably have some nonsense to spout about Rachel from accounts while pretending it's not a profoundly misogynistic label to apply to the Chancellor of the Exchequer. But that's not my job. That's not my business. I'm not here to distract you from anything. I'm here to remind you of what is being done to you on a daily basis. And it's not over yet. Not by a long chalk. So, tell me what I am supposed to be angry about today. 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. And genuinely, tell me what you're angry about. The effort put into making you angry this morning is superhuman. It's visible from space. And it is being conducted, not even a single syllable of a lie, by precisely the people who told you that Liz Truss was a genius. That Kwasi Kwarteng was the answer to all of our country's economic ills. This isn't a joke. This isn't a drill. This is the unvarnished truth. The same people that got paid to tell you that Liz Truss's budget was a stroke of genius are now telling you to get furious to the point of apoplexy with Rachel Reeves. And they get paid for both positions. Alex Brummer in the Daily Mail, Alistair Heath in the Daily Telegraph, countless broadcasters and the world and his wife on right-wing media get paid 3 years ago to tell you that Liz Truss is a genius and this year that Rachel Reeves is a wet blanket. I mean, listen, they could be wrong on both occasions. They could be right once and wrong once. I don't think anybody's going to argue now that Liz Truss was an economic genius, not even the people like Alistair Heath, who described it as the finest budget he'd ever seen. Nigel Farage, who said the best budget since 1986. They're not going to suddenly discover honesty, integrity, accuracy, decency. Doesn't mean they're wrong about Rachel Reeves. It just means you should take what they say with a pinch of salt, no? What are you actually angry about today? In the context of the budget, fun though it may be to do an angry hour when you can ring me about anything from potholes to Peterborough United, it's not the order of today. What is it going to be? What is it going to be? What have you been successfully primed? Palamine used to wander up to Daily Mail readers if he saw them at a railway station. He used to sidle up next to them and just go like this and go, "Are you angry yet? Are you angry yet? Are you angry yet? Has it worked? Has the blue touch paper been lit? Are you blaming children for the fact that our economy is still reeling from the idiocy of Brexit? What did John Major tell us earlier this week in a speech that was studiously ignored by all the media outlets that I've just mentioned? £100 billion of trade and the tax that would be commensurate with those figures. Are you angry yet with people who weren't even born when the country voted to leave the European Union? Are you angry with them yet? Are you blaming them yet? Children who haven't even been born yet. Theoretical children of the future that the Daily Mail, the Daily Telegraph and sundry broadcasters want you to be furious with today. Who are you cross with today? Theoretical children of the future, James. Who aren't you cross with? The people who said Brexit would be brilliant, Boris Johnson was a genius, Liz Truss was an economic visionary, and austerity was the necessary price to pay for the sins of the bankers, because the global financial crisis of 2008 was caused by there being too many sure start centres in Sunderland. Has it worked? Tell me why I'm supposed to be angry. I'm on the hook for all of this. I'm on the hook for the mansion tax, I'm on the hook for the income tax, I'm on the hook for all of this. All of it. Only thing I'm not really on the hook for is the electric car thing, but I was thinking of buying one. What, why should I be angry? Who should I be angry with? Genuine question. I don't want to make it all about me, but I am all of the things. All of the things that are supposed to be furious today. And the idea that I'm going to park my thoughtfulness and reach instead for fury at children who haven't been born yet, for the sin of living in a country governed by a party that thinks that they should be dragged out of measurable poverty. What am I supposed to be angry about, if not with the people who lie and lie and lie again and are lying like it's going out of fashion today? So genuinely, listen, I mean, that is authentic. It is sincere. You know that it's true. You know that it's real. But maybe there are some things that you should correctly be angry about, because goodness knows they haven't exactly covered themselves in competence, this government, have they, by any stretch of the imagination? She kept the backbenches happy yesterday, and she didn't set off any bombs. The coverage doesn't get affected by the facts. I hope you've realised that by now. If the people who thought Liz Truss was a genius are still getting paid to analyse Rachel Reeves's budget, we are lost, essentially, as an informed electorate. We're lost as an informed population. I suppose if 60 million people listen to this programme, there might be a chance of clawing back some sort of reality or credibility, but they don't. So we're completely lost. And what kind of a society? How bad would you have to be at your job to get paid 3 years later to do the same job you did when you were describing Liz Truss as a genius? So what are you angry about? And I don't think I want a row with you, unless, obviously, you love the idea of children being cold and hungry. What are you angry about? 0345 6060 973. Also, of course, as immigration plummets, as I told you it would, and now it has, the birth rate needs to go up. We need more children. The demographics demand that we have more children. And in fact, some of the fascists and far-right figures who are increasingly populating our public discourse will tell you that we need more children. But they don't want the children to be born to people who weren't born here, like Boris Johnson. They want the children to be born to people who were born here. And I mean, we don't want people with foreign parents, like Nigel Farage's daughters. We want people who, I don't know who we want, actually, but that's what they keep telling us. We need more babies that aren't like those babies there. Poor babies. We don't want poor babies. Poor babies don't grow up to be nurses or doctors. We just want, what do we want? I don't know what we want, but I know that we want it. And when do we want it? Now.
LBC.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad!
Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use.
Interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down, not off,
said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with 3 tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
Mr. Speaker, the new autumn budget.
There we go. Let the dust settle. Let rumours turn to fact. Over the past 40 years, we've seen financial curveballs of all shapes and sizes. But one thing stays the same. Our experts will continue to filter through the noise, helping you make the most of your tax allowances. Hargreaves Lansdowne, helping Britain invest through it all. Capital at risk. Tax rules applying can change.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It is 23 minutes after 10. And I feel free to challenge any of the facts that I just shared with you there. And any of the words that I just used. Any of the statistics that I just disseminated. Or, of course, just send me some insults, because you hate what you see when I hold up a mirror. I'm bloody angry about all these scroungers. Oh, good Lord, I've been played like a cheap fiddle. And damn that James O'Brien for proving it. I love those messages. I may even read some of them out today. But if it's worked and you are angry and you think that you have good reason to be angry, I'd like you to tell me what you're angry about. Because by every available measure, I should be absolutely apoplectic this morning about what Rachel Reeves has done to my family's finances overnight. But I look at the country that I live in and I think, good God, where else are you going to go for money if not to the people who've got some? Oh, sorry. That's not a rhetorical question, because, of course, the alternative is to go after poor children who haven't been born yet. Sean's in Birmingham. How angry are you, Sean, and why?
Oh, quite angry for a variety of reasons.
Well, you don't sound it. You, come on.
No, I always come across as positive, but yeah, I am fuming.
That's better, thank you.
So, it's as a starting point, I mean, the fact that we're... The two-child cap, the conversations that were going on this morning were just ridiculous. The fact that 450,000 children in poverty are going to be able to come out of poverty,
yes,
should be open, you know, should be open arms. We're thinking this is great, but no, because people on benefits are going to spend all this money and cause all of these problems and rada. Honestly, it's pathetic. I think the response to it, like, I think what we're forgetting in this debate is up until 2017, the two-child cap wasn't in place. It was the Tories that brought that in, and that has then thrown those children into poverty. It was a political choice to put all of those children in poverty, and Rachel Reeves is reversing that. Now, personally, I think it's late. I would have I'm happy that it's happened, but I think it should have been in the manifesto and done on day one. As was established, it's $3 billion out of what, $1,200 billion of government spending to have that big an impact.
You're absolutely right. I've only done it as $3 billion out of the £26 billion worth of tax rises. But if you take it as a percentage or a fraction of the overall government spending, then it's negligible.
A quarter of a percent.
So is it? Have you done the sums? I'm gonna trust you. A quarter of a percent.
Approximately a quarter of a percent. If it's $3 billion, I'm sure we're about $1,200 billion on spending. Then it's a quarter of a percent that we're.
Eleanor will be checking this furiously as you speak, because we are nothing.
As I say, give or take, I'm using
a quarter of a percent. So if you were able to talk to somebody who has been spitting nails about this policy change, this budget moment all day, you'd have to say, why are you more angry about this quarter of a percent than you are about anything else? And not least the fact that we reckon every 100,000 drop in net migration costs the country about $7 billion in tax takes. Again, you know, these are estimates and forecasts, but given that it's just dropped by about 80% from the peak of 2023, we're hemorrhaging money by clamping down on migration as well.
Exactly. This is another thing, which, linking it to migration, we have an aging population, we have a decrease in birth rate. The only way we have people in this country that are working as a percentage of the population and are here to pay the state pensions via taxation is if we have migration. So yes, there will be a lot of people welcoming that decrease in net migration, but when we're not, you know,
I mean, it was even in the OBR thing that got leaked yesterday. I mean, you clearly do your homework, so you probably noticed. I needed it to be pointed out to me.
You
had 20 minutes before the budget started to get stuck into
it. I'm sorry. I decided to listen to your coverage instead.
Quite right. Best coverage in the country. at the world, actually. But the forecast contained an explanation of how growth is impacted by falls in migration. So we're living in a country, this is what I mean about not being a serious population anymore. We're living in a country where you have two voices speaking at the same time, the same person speaking in two voices at the same time, attacking immigration, saying it must come down, it must come down, demanding growth while ignoring the fact that every available measure tells us that you can't have growth without immigration. And in fact, cutting migration cuts growth. It's there in black and white in the OBR's analysis.
This is it. And I think there's one final point on this to do with my anger is where was the exit tax? Where was the... We talked about, I think it was last week, we spoke about the two up, two down situation and that being taken away. There was no conversation that we weren't having an exit tax. There was... I know that the mansion tax came in. I don't think that was enough the way that they did it. I thought you could have done it on a percentage basis, but...
I have a bit of sympathy for them not doing performative politics. So 5 million is the upper limit. So if you live in a £50 million house, you're going to pay the same as someone who lives in a 5 and a bit million pound house. But I presume that the numbers of people living in £50 million houses are so tiny that it wouldn't actually raise a significant amount. We can't have our cake and eat it. We can't complain about the negligible nature of the two-child benefit cap while also getting cross about the equally negligible, even more negligible amounts of money that would be raised by going after people in really expensive houses as opposed to hard-working strivers like me who will be on the hook for the mansion tax.
I did do a little bit of maths on that one with 0.5% that was spoken about, because I think this is raising about 430 million.
Yeah, that's what they say.
The conversation was about sort of about 0.5% on anything over 2 million initially. I could have just made that up. I'm not certain.
Well, it would have been, but maybe came from a think tank. It may not have come from the government.
That's it. But I think that was saying it would raise double. And I know in the grand scheme of things that that's, you know, 500 million. It's not massive in the fact of how far that could go. But I think poverty measures, that's where it could have went the furthest. And I think if they really wanted to flip this government round and put the focus on people at the bottom, they could have created, I don't know, something there. Like I say, I'm splitting hairs at this point.
No, yeah, and you're always very, very well informed, which is of enormous value to us. And you also obliquely make an incredibly important point, which is that they can now argue we haven't focused on the people at the bottom. It might be the sort of compassionate Christian thing to do, but it may also not be the pragmatic thing to do. But they haven't done that. They have attempted to keep most of the people happy most of the time, which is why the right-wing media is reduced to encouraging you to hate children who haven't been born yet. I'm really sorry, but it is that simple. Sean understands. But just in case you don't yet, you can tell the reality of a situation by the desperation of the people attacking it. And the people attacking Rachel Reeves are precisely the same people that brought you Brexit austerity, Boris Johnson and Liz Truss. And they dominate public discourse in this country. And if I sometimes seem to be a little bit obsessed by it, it's because I'm patriotic. And patriotism demands that you care about your fellow citizen, especially when they've been told to hit themselves in the face with a frying pan every morning for the last 10 years. Here's Dominic Ellis with the headlines.
New figures show net migration to the UK dropped sharply to 204,000 in the year to June. That's a decrease from 649,000 in the year to the same month in 2024. The Chancellor has admitted to LBC her budget's tax rises will impact working people, but has stressed they're fair and necessary. Rachel Reeves announced rises totalling £26 billion a year by 2030 yesterday. And President Trump says the shooting of two National Guard troops near the White House was a monstrous act. The soldiers remain in a critical condition. LBC weather, rain developing across northern and western areas, cloudy but dry elsewhere, a high of 13 degrees.
This is LBC.
For GCSE and A-level success, one name stands out. Justin Craig. Small, tailored group tuition that really works. Justin Craig courses consolidate knowledge, boost confidence and improve technique for mocks, assessments and exams. Available in classrooms and online. One-to-one also available. With over 40 years experience, Justin Craig has helped more than 100,000 students. For more details, visit justincraig.ac.uk. Justin Craig. Tailored for you.
Black Friday is non-stop. Orders, calls, messages.
Sounds like you need the right sidekick to keep business booming, Claire.
Go on.
In EE's Black Friday sale, you can save £720 on a 36-month plan with the Samsung Galaxy S25 Ultra. Perfect for keeping your business running smoothly.
What a deal? Thanks, Kev.
Search EE Business today. BT and EE. Better for business.
Excludes 20% VAT. Ends 4th of December. Terms apply.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it, and there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
10:34 is the time. I do occasionally flirt with the thought of what it would be like if you were deploying the tactics of the other lot so entirely. So when Rachel Reeves says, I'm asking everyone to make a contribution, if you were at the shallower end of the media, but coming at it from perhaps a slightly more compassionate perspective, then you could say, why don't you want to? Why don't you want to make a contribution to the mess that we're currently in? Why do you think you should be exempt? Why do you hate this country? If you don't, why don't you move? That's what you do, right? If you're in the kind of tabloid business, right-wing tabloids. Why do you hate this country? Why don't you leave if you don't like it? Why don't you want to make a contribution? I want to make a contribution. I recognise the mess that we're in. Why would you not want to make a contribution? And you can't blame it on immigrants. There's not going to be any left soon. Despite the fact that plummeting figure, 649,000 to 204,000. So if that figure of 7 billion per 100,000 is accurate, and I've got no reason to doubt it, but if you think I should, then please tell me why. As always, all lines of communication are open. That is, give or take, that is over 400,000 in a single year at £7 billion per 100,000. That is £28 billion lost to the economy as a consequence of net migration plummeting. Do you see what I mean about how bonkers we've become? That's a loss of £28 billion. The cost of abolishing the two-child benefit cap will be £3 billion, a tiny fraction of the £28 billion lost as a consequence of migration falling. A tiny fraction, actually, of the £26 billion raised by Rachel Reeves yesterday. An even tinier fraction, a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of the overall government spending. But the people who dug the hole that we are now trying to get out of are adamant that the people you should blame for Rachel Reeves asking everybody to make a contribution are poor children who haven't been born yet. And actually, that's not fair. And some who have. And some who have. Do you know what I'd really like you to do? If you fell for it, tell me how. How does it work? How do you fall for stuff that, to some of us is so blindingly obvious? Does anyone still think Liz Truss was a genius? Boris Johnson was brilliant? Austerity was necessary? Anybody? Brexit was a great idea? Does anybody still think it? And yet here we are in a country where the man who probably best embodies all of that, the man who thought Liz Truss was brilliant, the man who told you to vote for Brexit, the man who greased Boris Johnson's passage into Downing Street, the man who loved austerity, he's currently leading in the opinion poll. Well, what's happened to, what's wrong with us? It's absolutely incredible. A bloke sold you a box yesterday with a big picture of a fridge on it, and when you opened it, it was full of bricks. Oh, he's back today with another box. This has got a big picture of a car on it. You can't wait to drive it. Hasn't crossed your mind that this might be full of bricks as well? Every box he's ever sold, whatever picture was on the cover, has turned out to be full of bricks. But here we are, queuing up to give him our life savings. Has the whole country been kicked in the head by a horse? Lynn's in West Wickham. Lynn, what would you like to say?
Oh, hi, James.
Hello.
Hi, I'm very nervous.
It's only me.
Well, I'd like to say that I love listening to your programme.
Thank you.
Because you're one of the only people that ever tell the truth.
I hope so, Lynn. I hope so.
Well, to me, certainly to me, because obviously the news and everything else is so biased, very, very biased. And I hate listening to it, and I hate listening to people that talk about the Labour Party.
Well, I'm not a fully signed up member of the fan club for the current government. And in the last three or four months, I'm afraid I've felt deeply disillusioned and deeply let down. But two things can be true at once. We're living in an ecosystem that is entirely corrupt, and it's been corrupted largely by precisely the people who were pouring praise on Liz Truss 3 years ago and now are attacking Rachel Reeves. But,
But you never hear a good thing, do you? I mean, when they do something good, which is really, really good for working class people, you don't hear it. Anything that's negative, you hear. And you hear it over and over again. Almost like they're trying to hypnotise you or something. But it'd be very nice to hear the good things. And I think her budget was very rounded and very fair, personally.
I don't know who else is supposed to be on the hook for this money, if not the people who've got it. And none of us really feel that we've got too much, or very few of us feel that we've got too much, and an awful lot of the people who have got too much don't think they've got enough, which is one of the reasons why the world is in such
exactly
a mess.
Right.
But,
that is exactly right.
And who else?
You hear about when they couldn't pay with the minimum wage. you hear of people, you know, so rich that can't afford it. Well, if they can't, who can?
Do you know, I got a mate who delivers ice cream to the theatres in the West End. He drives up from Stratford every day. I often bump into him, and he sent me a message last time I was talking to a business owner who was telling me that he couldn't afford, I think it was minimum wage, that he couldn't afford minimum wage. He was going to have to shut down one of his things. And and he sent me a message. I said, ask him what car he drives. And it worked. It did, I mean, fair play to the fellow who was on the other end of the phone line. He didn't lie to me and say a Reliant Robin or a fourth-hand Skoda. He said a Range Rover. A top-of-the-range Range Rover. And I thought, well, how much are you paying your staff if you're going to have to shut down your business and carry on driving your Range Rover because you can't afford
How can you afford to run it? I mean,
what's it going up to? Is it going up to £10.25 or have I got that wrong? £12.21, I think. So if you're age 21 and over, it's going up to £12.71 an hour. It's going up by 50p an hour, £4 a day. And they'll be queuing up to tell the Daily Mail that they're going to have to shut up shop because they can't afford to pay their staff £4 a day more while driving home in their top-of-the-range Range Rover. And I'm being lazy. And there'll be lots of people running businesses who are struggling, but you know what the right-wing message to them is. Find something else to do. Well, work harder. Or get on your bike. Or if you don't like it, leave the country. Oh, dear.
Upsetting when you hear nothing but negative views.
Yes, well, that's what I'm here for, Lynn.
And before the budget yesterday, there was a discussion. I don't know what channel it was on, and everybody was so excited that this had leaked.
Yes.
We
were probably guilty of that as well, although, in my defence, possibly not quite as excited as everybody else. The problem is that if this is what you do for a living, you kind of lose sight of what matters outside your bubble. Oh, my goodness, it's leaked. What does that change? Nothing at all. But my goodness, it's leaked. And it was a very big deal on one level. Mm-hmm. But on in terms of the impact that the budget has on the people tuning in to hear about the budget, the impact was zero.
Yeah, exactly. But it was the glee. It was kind of everybody so pleased. Oh, wow, they're going to have a head start on this.
Yeah, I know that you're right, but I am part of the problem here, not part of the solution, in that journalistically, it was the most exciting thing that happened yesterday because it was man bites dog. You know, the Chancellor standing up and making a statement, revealing her budget, that's dog bites man. That happens all the time. The full detail of the budget being accidentally leaked has never happened before. So I'm going to not defend my colleagues. I am going to explain their conduct and indeed my own. Although I think Natasha and I were probably the least excited by the news of the leak in the pantheon of British broadcasters yesterday. That wasn't necessarily a good thing. Thank you, Lynn. And thank you so much for the kind words. They do mean a lot. They really do. 10:42 is the time. Alan is in Manchester. Alan, what are you angry about? Has it worked? How furious are you? Urgh, skivers, strivers, poor children, damn them all.
Well, James, my angers actually are Rachel Reeves and Keir Starmer.
Go on, tell me more.
Well, I just wish Rachel and Keir would lean on that dispatch box, look across and say, this country is £100 billion poorer off because of your Brexit, started by Cameron because he was worried about his MPs jumping ship to UKIP. And then it was carried on by Johnson, aided and abetted by comrade, live from Moscow, Farage. And this country is £100 billion poorer and you are responsible. You are responsible. Don't look at me. I'm just trying to put the right wrongs of the sunlit uplands and there's no downside to Brexit. And it really annoys me that the Labour Party, my party, do not wade in time and time again and say, you're Brexit, we're living with the consequences. And another thing,
she kind of did. She went a little bit further than they've gone before.
Oh, James, it's about a year too late, mate. It's about 10 years too late, actually, from people like me.
Well, there wouldn't have been much point the Labour Party did. In fact, the Labour Party did do it quite a lot in opposition. They've done it rather less in government. But the better late than never is not a phrase I've invented myself, Alan.
Yeah, but the thing is, James, from my point of view, we are sort of low in the opinion polls, and it looks like the one that we elect a con man.
Yes.
You know, the man who can't even spend any time in this country or in his constituency.
You can't just say that. You have to acknowledge that he's very good at nurturing talent. Nathan Gill, for example, was a protege of Nigel Farage for many years, a very close friend. I believe Nigel was his mentor.
He's got a lot of time on his hands. I think he's sending him a file in the cage.
I'll tell you what, like to know, while you've raised this subject, which is obviously one that I don't talk about very often, did Nathan Gill ever say anything about Russia that Nigel Farage would disagree with? Do we know?
I don't think he did. I mean, I think our Nigel was saying that he admired Putin as an operator. I think he was appearing on Russia Today.
Do you get paid for that, do you think?
You get paid. I think his earnings outside Parliament are $1.2 million,
actually. Some of that will be for, very responsible and important work within his constituency, I'm sure. But do you get paid for appearing on Russia Today? Because I think everybody acknowledged that it was a sort of propaganda arm of the Russian government.
I don't know if I'm being honest, I don't know if he did get it. Why would he do it? Now he's promoting cryptocurrency, which apparently is a big thing.
If you were appearing on Russia Today a lot and getting paid a lot, you wouldn't really need to bribe anybody to parrot Kremlin talking points, would you? Or big up Vladimir Putin, because you'd be getting paid to appear on the propaganda arm of the Kremlin.
Well, I believe you get paid on GB News.
I don't know that I agree with you about this. What would happen if she'd stood up yesterday and said, Brexit, 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 Brexit? The newspapers wouldn't look any different today. People would still be ringing Nick to say that 5% of the country is subsidising the other 95% and everybody else hasn't got a job. I mean, I don't know whether that's pessimistic or defeatist, but what changes if the entire government starts singing from the accurate hymn sheet of Brexit having cost us, according to the former Conservative Prime Minister, John Major, drawing on almost pretty much undisputed figures, cost us £100 billion in business already, and it ain't going to get better any time soon. What would change if they did that?
Well, the thing is, but James, we're the government. We should drive the narrative. We instead of being proactive, we're always reactive.
But what would change? And for me, what would change?
I think, if it starts getting reported on, and the thing is, at the end of the day, James, facts are facts. When we were going through the referendum, it was sunlit uplands. There's no downside to Brexit. They need us more than we need them. And now it just turned out the dust is settled and the facts are there. I'm sorry, you have a lovely saying for it, James. Like saying, have pity on, I forget what you say. But people were conned.
Oh, compassion for the con men. No, contempt for the con men, compassion for the con. I think that ship is close to sailing. I think, do you know what? I don't know is the short answer to whether or not that would work. But I think you're right. The truth matters, so you've got to try. You've got to try. I mean, look at today's nonsensical print media. Absolutely absurd, given that almost all of them were blowing smoke up Liz Truss's fundament just 3 years ago. Absolutely absurd to turn to these people for guidance, insight or analysis. So why bother worrying about what they're going to say? They could announce jam for everybody. They could announce free apple pies from now until the next millennium, and they'd still somehow find a way of casting it as a negative. So just bite the blooming bullet and hit the Brexit button every minute of every day. Just say there's no pop. But then again, you've got the problem that Ed Davey seems to gloss over on a weekly basis at PMQs, which is A, they wouldn't have us back, and B, we can't necessarily negotiate anything that would be immeasurably better than the mess, the dog's dinner that Farage and Johnson and Rees-Mogg and the rest of them have left us with. Thank you, Alan. 10:47 is the time.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
They promise growth and change. Growth has been cut again for every year bar this, and the only changes are changes they're making to their own promises. They promised not to come back to increase taxes. They are. They promised to get control of government spending on welfare. It's going up. They promised, indeed the Chancellor said, it would hurt working people to allow more of them to be dragged into paying higher levels of income tax. Guess what? That is exactly what is happening.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad! Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use.
Interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down, not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance?
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with 3 tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
At Laithwaite, we go to great lengths to bring you great wine. We go far and wide. Searching high, and we mean really high, and low, and we mean stored deep underground in a cave low. Off the shelf? We don't go there. Off the beaten track? We certainly go there. And the best bit is, we even come to you. Order now at laithwaites.co.uk. Laithwaites. We stop at nothing to bring you great wine.
For people living with dementia, Christmas can be confusing, overwhelming, heartbreaking. Families are often left to cope alone. But you can help a family reimagine Christmas. Donate to Alzheimer's Society and you can help provide practical support, expert advice and crucial companionship this Christmas. It will take a society to beat dementia, and we can't do it without you. Search Alzheimer's Society and donate today.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it. And there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
Don't mention the hole. Just pick over the attempts to get us out of it, which are far from perfect. But don't mention the hole, because if you mention the hole, you'd have to talk about who dug it. And if you start talking about who dug it, you're talking about almost all of the Tory supporting media. That's it. That's the tweet, as the kids say. Don't mention the hole, only mention the spades that Rachel Reeves is using to try to fill the hole in. Because if you talk about the hole, you've got to talk about who dug it. And guess what? It was not dug by children in poor families with more than one sibling. Apparently that's going to come as a major shock to many people in my profession. The hole was not dug by children in families, poor families with more than one sibling. Yeah, it was dug, of course, by all of the people queuing up to tell you that Rachel Reeves is a disaster. It was dug by David Cameron. It was dug by Theresa May. It was dug by Boris Johnson. It was dug by Liz Truss, and probably not that much by Rishi Sunak, to be fair. It certainly wasn't dug by one of their predecessors, John Major, who pointed out last week that Brexit itself has cost £100 billion. Don't mention that. Whatever you do, don't mention that. Just keep telling them that the hole was dug by poor children who haven't been born yet. And something about farmers. Just while I'm on the subject of how the media works, there are three stories in the news today that I wonder how they would have been covered had some of the identifying characteristics of some of the people involved been different. There is the story of a man in Liverpool who drove his car into a crowd of civilians. He pleaded guilty to various offences yesterday. What do you think the coverage of that story today would be if some of that man's characteristics had been different from what they are? I'm not even going to go into detail. I'm going to leave you to speculate as to why that's not a huge story. Okay? Another story that I suspect would be, why has nobody complained about farmers blocking ambulances getting through in Westminster yesterday? Farmers parking their tractors all over Westminster, making traffic much, much slower. Why is no one hitting their desk and ranting on about ambulances, mythical ambulances, theoretical ambulances not being able to get through because farmers don't think they should pay 50% of the inheritance tax that everybody else with similar-sized businesses has to pay, or similar-sized estates has to pay? Why wasn't that anywhere? And then a story that may get a little bit more coverage as time passes, but again, it leads us into territory that looks an awful lot like asking who actually dug the hole. One of the men who received an extraordinarily generous PPE contract in return for faulty masks. I'll say that again. He supplied 50 million faulty masks during the pandemic. bought an £8.5 million London flat shortly afterwards, has just had the flat that he bought, had a criminal restraint order imposed on the profit. But, you know, I don't know how he got on the VIP lane. We can but speculate. But tell me again about that house that Rachel Reeves is renting out, because that's front page news. 10:54 is the time. And then a quick line on that OBR explanation. Our central forecast sees potential output growth slow from 1.8% in 2025 to 1.3% in 2026, before picking up to 1.5% by 2030. The slowdown next year partly reflects a further fall in levels of net migration, which affects labour supply and aggregate output, but has a much smaller impact on output per person. So anybody talking to you about growth who's not also talking to you about net migration falling being bad is dishonest, at the very, very least. Disgraceful, at the very, very worst. I'm here to talk about growth. Could you just explain the relationship between growth and migration? Absolutely not, because I'm very, very anti-migration. Something, something, legitimate concerns, hotels, something, something. But you keep telling us that you really care about growth. Yeah, but everybody accepts the relationship between growth and net migration. Yeah, but I'm only going to talk about growth. I'm not here to talk about net migration, except on the other 364 days of the year when I can't talk about anything else. Down with that. Down with that. It affects growth in a negative fashion. Yeah, but I've told you already, we don't talk about that. That's how it works. I don't know why it's always falling to me to show you how it operates. But anyone talking about growth who's not talking about migration is a fraud. Anybody celebrating the fall in migration without also calling for a fall in growth is a fraud. Anybody calling for a fall in migration, which you've got now, one of the biggest in history, without also celebrating the concomitant fall in growth is a fraud. How many frauds are there? How many frauds? Jan is in Ivy Bridge. Jan, what would you like to say?
Well, good morning, James.
Hello, Jan.
I would like to say that I'm a little bit sick of this constantly battering parents for child benefit, really, and vilifying them. I just want to say that when I was born in 1960,
yes,
the first child did not get child benefit. It was only children, second and consecutive children, that got child benefit, yes. And the reason that was done was because post-war years, they needed the working class people to have more children.
I did not know that either. The logic is irresistible. Of course it makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. And I think to a certain degree, that may be what's going on now. We need more young working class people to contribute to our pensions and, national insurance-wise. So I don't think they're necessarily encouraging people to have more children. I just don't want them to feel restricted. I just don't think they want them to feel restricted.
It works out just over 50 quid a week, doesn't it?
It's nothing, is it really?
Well, I mean, it's nothing to the angriest people. It's nothing to the people in my line of work who would think nothing of spending, 50 quid on a bunch of flowers.
Yeah.
But it is perhaps a bigger sum of money to people who think
yes.
that... I mean, how much money do you really need to have another child? It's a heck of a lot more than that. But, of course,
Of course, the other thing that people always forget to say is that that money is given to the child. And it was blanketed across the country so that every child born in this country got the same.
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't guarantee that. There was nothing to stop mum taking it down the pub and spending it all on cherry bees and baby shams.
The money was there so that poorer people could spend it on contributing to their family income and, keeping food on the table and clothes on their children's back and whatever they chose to do with it.
And all of these points stand, even though, and I know you know this, but for the benefit of people listening, the you're talking about the child benefit that still applies to everybody, whereas the cap was on people who were claiming the extra dimension of benefit that goes to families on universal credit, all of whom, if you read right-wing newspapers today, are sponging layabouts. Just ignore completely the fact that they're not. 40% of those families are in work, and I don't have the figures on the ones that move in and out of work, but that will be huge as well. There'll be people listening to this radio station who are on Universal Credit and working, wondering what planet they inhabit when they hear people on Universal Credit described in the kind of terms that the people who think Liz Truss is an economic genius have been using all morning. Thank you, Jan. I like that idea of... I mean, that is... How many elephants can you get in a room before there's no room for the rest of us? We need more people. We need a birth rate increase. If we're going to cut migration, we're going to need even more of a birth rate increase. And yet we are getting being encouraged to get very, very cross about people... about it being a little bit easier for families with lots of children to scrape by. What have you done? I've moved them out of poverty. How does that reach the minds of a Daily Telegraph reader? I've given them gold bullion. That's how it works. What have you done, Rachel Reeves? I've moved 400,000 kids out of actual measured poverty. How does it get reported to Daily Telegraph readers? She's given them all a Rolls Royce. You get a Rolls Royce if you have 10 children now in this country. And do you know what the really sad thing is? I'll probably get a call claiming that this time next week.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, official figures show net migration to the UK dropped sharply to 204,000 in the year to June. The Office for National Statistics says that's a drop from 649,000 from the same period in 2024. It's been driven in part by fewer non-EU nationals arriving for work and study. Ben Brindle is from the Migration Observatory at the University of Oxford and has spoken to LBC.
As a result of policies introduced by the previous Conservative government, banning most students from bringing their partners with them when they come to study, and looking at applications to hire care workers more closely because of reports of exploitation in the sector, the number of people coming to the UK from outside the EU has fallen quite significantly, and that's why we've got the figures of 204,000 today for the year ending June 2025.
The Chancellor has admitted to LBC that her budget tax rises will impact working people, but has stressed they'll be better off in the long term. Rachel Reeves announced yesterday tax rises totalling £26 billion a year by 2030. The government ministers refused to rule out restricting jury trials only to the most serious cases in England and Wales. A leaked memo earlier this week suggested that juries could be reserved for murder, rape and manslaughter cases. The measure is reportedly being considered as part of efforts to cut Crown Court backlogs. Justice Minister Sarah Sackman has responded to an urgent questions in the Commons this morning, tabled by the Conservatives.
What Magna Carta says is to no one will we delay right or justice. The right to a swift and prompt trial is a fundamental ingredient of fairness. And when you have the crisis that we inherited from the party opposite, a backlog now of some 80,000 cases, behind each and every one of those cases, an actual victim, we are denying in the current system a fair trial.
The Ministry of Justice says no final decision has been taken. Firefighters in Hong Kong are searching for hundreds of people still missing after a major fire broke out in a high-rise block of flats. 55 people have died, 3 men have been arrested. And the United States has stopped processing immigration requests from Afghan nationals after 2 National Guard troops were shot in Washington. The soldiers are in a critical condition. President Trump says his officials are confident that the suspected attacker, who's been detained, entered from Afghanistan in 2021. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 15 at 96.75. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.14. LBC weather. Rain will develop across northern and western areas. Cloudy but dry elsewhere. A high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Markets react to the latest updates outlined in the autumn.
Attention turns to Westminster.
Headlines change, but smart investors stay prepared. With IG, invest commission-free on all stocks and shares. Plus, earn 4% AER variable interest on your uninvested cash while you plan your next move. Whatever the autumn budget brings, stay in control at IG.com. Your capital's at risk. Qualifying criteria applies. Valid on SIP, GIA and ISA products only. Other fees may apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three 3 minutes after 11 is the time. Stories that possibly will become bigger with every passing year. Chapter 467. France has just announced a return to military service, albeit that it will be voluntary. But it means that a scheme will exist for people who don't want to pursue a career in the military to spend a year or two in the military. In order to be better prepared in the event of the military being needed. I know I harp on about Brexit, but do you remember when the people who told you to vote for it were complaining about the possibility of a European army, as if an army that we are in? Who would be terrified of a European army? I'll give you a clue. It's the political leader that Nigel Farage admires most. But again, for the avoidance of doubt, there is no evidence whatsoever that Nigel Farage has ever accepted bribes to parrot Kremlin talking points. That was his close friend, protege and party leader in Wales, Nathan Gill. But I often puzzle over how the negative interpretation of a so-called European army managed to burrow so deep into the Brexit debate. I'm not a military man, but I'm fairly confident from my studies of history that the armies you need to worry about are not the armies that you're in. It's the other lot that you should be worried about. But they got it, didn't they? I mean, I wonder, of all the Brexit nonsenses, whether the European army was one of the biggest in the long term because of the threat of Russia. And if you were Russia and you had designs on Crimea, or you had designs on Kyiv, or you had designs on parts of Poland or Estonia or Latvia, what would be your worst nightmare? Yeah, European army. Not NATO, oddly, because if you can get someone in the White House who does your bidding, if you can get someone in the White House who is in awe of you or frightened of you, then NATO doesn't actually represent the bulwark against Soviet expansion that it was conceived to achieve. If you are Vladimir Putin and you have illegal imperial ambitions, what is your worst nightmare? A European army. And who was telling you that a European army would be a terrible thing? The bloke who didn't take bribes from a Kremlin stooge, but of course was mentor to the bloke that did. Funny that, isn't it? It's strange how these threads get tied together so neatly. Sheila had that bloke who hasn't been elected by anybody but keeps popping up at Farage's press conferences all the time, despite Farage's well-documented hatred of unelected bureaucrats. The unelected bureaucrat who's all over reform like a rash. He was on with Sheila last night. She asked him a perfectly reasonable question. I thought that lot were really big fans of perfectly reasonable questions. Wasn't that the defence he offered up when he was disseminating Andrew Tate's lies in the aftermath of the Southport murders? That was what Farage said, wasn't it? I'm just asking questions. Sheila Fogarty was just asking questions last night about the man who was mentor to the Russian stooge, the Kremlin parrot. But that, what's his name? Is it Zia Yusuf? Had a right old fit of the vapours. Funny how the free speech crowd hate free speech, isn't it? I may play you that clip. I think I should, actually. Sheila was on characteristically cracking form, asking a perfectly reasonable question of an unelected bureaucrat who apparently speaks for a political party led by a man who hates unelected bureaucrats and has spoken for years about how they should have nothing to do with democracy or politics. Riddle me that! A perfectly reasonable question about whether the man who's been parroting Kremlin propaganda for as long as anybody could remember is, in fact, some sort of Kremlin stooge, just like the bloke that he was best mates with, until suddenly he wasn't. And he's now in jail for being a Kremlin stooge. So we may talk about that a little bit later, but I want to talk next about the thing that just popped up towards the end of the programme, towards the end of the last hour there. And it's the reality of being on universal credit. I mean, you know what happens, don't you, when we read headlines about how all our money is going to people on benefits. They never mention pensions. Never mention pensions, which went up yesterday by quite a lot. The old age pension went up yesterday by quite a lot. And I am not here to make vulnerable pensioners feel more vulnerable. I think it's quite a lazy rhetorical flourish to sort of try and blame pensioners for everything. But the notion of our system currently being over-generous is a valid one. But nobody really feels, as a pensioner, that they were targeted by yesterday's budget. I mean, literally. I mean, old-age pensioners in receipt of the state pension. Literally. That is a benefit. So that is when you read headlines about going after the strivers to reward people on benefits, they don't mention that that's largely pensioners, maybe even mostly pensioners. I need to double check. The old age pension is one of the biggest drains on the public purse, but it's a good drain, right? It's a drain to be proud of. But they don't want you to think about them. They want you to think about people who are on universal credit. And I'd like to dedicate the next hour of the programme, or at least the 40 or minutes or so we've got before Simon Marks joins us, Mystery Hour from 12, don't forget, to people who have been on universal credit, whether you were working or not. I think it is the single most misunderstood element of public policy in the country at the moment, with the possible exception of motability schemes. But universal credit will affect a lot more people than motability. So, for example, if I were to ask you, how much do you think you get every month if you're single and under 25? You're on universal credit, you're single, you're under 25. How much do you think you get every single month? I'm ignorant as well. Let me make that absolutely clear. I don't know. I was on income support for a few months many, many years ago, and it also qualified you for housing benefits. So the figure of how much you got on income support was largely meaningless in the overall figure because you also got help with your rent. You got your rent paid pretty much in its entirety. I don't know what happens with your rent if you're on universal credit, but I know that if you're single and under 25 and relying on universal credit, not in work, you get £316.98 per month. Per month. £316.98 per month. If you're over 25, you get 400 quid. I don't know what happens on your 25th birthday that means you need 32 quid a month more, 8 quid a week more, just over a pound a day more than you needed when you were 24. But there it is. If you're 25 and over, you get 400 quid. The really tough bit is if you live with your partner, you don't get 800 quid, you get 500 quid. So it goes up by £97.55. What a weird system. And I also find myself wondering whether it was a good idea or a bad idea to conflate the two. It was Ian Duncan Smith, wasn't it? To actually conflate the two so that people who are either not very bright, not very well informed or not very nice can pretend to believe, because they can't still believe it, and certainly not if they've been working in the media for more than 5 minutes. They can't honestly believe that everybody on universal credit is unemployed. They must know that about 40%, and the figures stayed more or less steady since it was introduced. So they must know that about 40% of people at any one point in time are employed. 40% of households will have somebody in them working. But what you don't know, well, I haven't got the numbers to describe, is how fluid the 60% is. So how many of the 60% were working last year or will be working next year? The rump of people, beloved of tabloid tyrants, who never work, never will work, never want to work, never did work, that little rump of people is hard to measure. But by conflating people in work with people out of work, then you end up creating an environment in which people can pretend, because I refuse to believe anybody still considers this, people can pretend not to understand that universal credit is both a temporary benefit for most people on it and a benefit for people in work, for almost half of people on it, 40% of households. So I've got two questions, really. One is about the detail, okay? One is about the detail of being on universal credit. It's the question I ask more often than any other on this programme. What's it like? Right, what is the financial... Because the bit, there's two bits I don't understand. How do you pay your rent? Is that a separate bet? Forgive me for not knowing this. I should, especially as I'm throwing bones at people who pretend not to understand things. At least I'm being honest about the stuff I don't know. And the second bit is the relationship between work and universal credit. So if you are among the 40% of claimants who are working, I presume it's part-time. Can you be on full-time work and still qualifying for universal credit? I genuinely need you to tell me, because I rely upon His Majesty's media for an awful lot of my understanding of these issues until I realise that I don't know enough, and then I rely on you. So I think the current figure is about 34%. It hovers between 34 and 40 over the lifetime of the benefit, over the lifetime of universal credit. It is incorrectly conflated in many people's minds with an unemployment benefit because, you know, most people on it will be out of work, but we don't know how long they've been out of work or for how long they will be out of work. None of this matters, of course, to the tabloid columnist. But the narrative today is that you're having a laugh. I don't think anyone would dispute that, right? Either you're listening to this thinking, no, they are having a laugh, or you're listening to this thinking, yeah, James is right, everybody thinks we're having a laugh. Are you having a laugh? 0345 6060 973. You're on Universal Credit. Are you having a laugh? A genuine question. And you are more than welcome. You can change your name if you want to ring in and say yes, but I've got a very well-tuned radar for liars. It's why I'm so interested in Nigel Farage's career. 0345 6060 973. What is it like to be on Universal Credit? Okay? Both in terms of detail and in terms of experience. But the other bit that I want, and it speaks more to feelings than facts, is how big is the gulf between your lived reality and the national narrative? How big you sit here as somebody who's on Universal Credit, listening to the radio, thinking, what is this universe that these other people who've never been on it inhabit? These extremely well-paid radio presenters who are portraying me as some sort of skiving layabout. I'm a foster carer. I qualify for Universal Credit. Who is he talking about? Because he's certainly not talking about me, and I'm on it. So what does it feel like to be... If this is indeed how you feel, because it may not be, you may be about to ring me and tell me that, yep, I am having a laugh. But what does it feel like to be so egregiously misrepresented? And for people who, like me, have no experience whatsoever of Universal Credit, I wonder whether it was a really bad idea to conflate the two. So unemployment currently stands at about 5%, I think. And that will be approximately 60 to 60-something percent of Universal Credit claimants, right? If I've understood everything correctly. But by having Universal Credit paid to people both in work and out of work, you somehow inflate, or you allow dishonest people to inflate the public's perception of how many people... Do you see what I mean? Has conflating the two been a terrible mistake? Because it creates an environment in which most people don't know the difference. How many people, for example, knew that if you're single and under 25, you're expected to get by on 317 quid a month? And how many people knew that 30-odd percent of people on this credit were in work as of May of this year? Hit the numbers now, you will go through. I think this is just about painting the wall with knowledge and experience, so that next time we hear someone wanging on about Universal Credit, we will at least have a few more facts at our fingertips than we currently do. And I need your help to do that. I'm sorry, I probably should have been across this a little bit sooner. Last time we talked about child benefit, I was half an hour into the programme before I fully understood the difference between the child benefit my mum got when I was a kid and the two child benefit cap. And I do this stuff for a living, so... You know, there is forgivable ignorance, isn't there? And then there is unforgivable ignorance. And sometimes it's hard to know where the line between the two is. But you educated me on the two-child benefit cap, and you're about to educate me on Universal Credit. What's it like? What's it like to live on it? And what's it like to live with the very deliberate and very ugly misrepresentation of reality that the people who, forgive me, my record is going to stick again, told you to vote for Brexit, told you austerity was a good thing, told you Boris Johnson was a genius, told you Liz Truss was an economic visionary, all of those people are now telling everybody that that Universal Credit is a cakewalk, a jamboree, a joy. What's the reality? What's it like to live with the lies?
This is LBC. There's fast, really fast, and then there's lightning fiber fast.
It's the Lightning Fibre Winter Sale. Your chance to enjoy rock-solid full fibre broadband for even less, with up to 20% off selected packages. And with one-touch switch, switching to Lightning Fibre couldn't be easier. Hurry, sale ends on December 31st. Check availability at lightningfibre.co.uk.
Lightning Fibre. Full fibre that rocks.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quaterpillar Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot Bears. And four giant slides on the brand new Wave Runner 2. Let's plunge!
What's next, Dad?
Cannon Arena Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom Go-Karts, Trampolines, Magical Wood and Cafes.
Nutcatch Adventure Park.
The fun goes on and on and on and on.
Book now at nutcatch.com.
When you buy a BMW approved used electric car, there are no surprises. You'll find the largest range and the widest choice. Naturally, every car has been meticulously checked by qualified BMW technicians. Hardly a plot twist. And they always come with a battery health report and at least 12 months unlimited mileage BMW warranty. Just as you'd expect. BMW approved used electric cars. Nothing new here. Search BMW approved used electric. Obviously.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
90 minutes after 11 is the time. Universal credit. I mean, it's a long list, isn't it? Single mothers, flat screen TVs. Who are you going to blame? Who are you going to get cross with? Not the people. I'm bored of pointing it out, actually. I'm not going to stop. But not the people who've got the lot. People who've got NAFL. Today's response to the budget is targeting children from poor families that haven't been born yet and people on universal credit. I can't speak to children from, even I can't get people from poor families who haven't been born yet to ring in, but I can get people who know a little bit more about universal credit than every single journalist on right-wing newspapers or radio programs or TV shows in the country. And I mean you, so you better ring me. Matt's in Waltham Forest. Matt, what made you pick up the phone?
Morning, James.
Hello.
I have been on Universal Credit since about May.
Okay.
I lost my job at the end of January, beginning of February. Full disclosure, ex-journalist.
Of course.
Also worked in public relations, and that's the job I had that I lost. It was media relations manager for a large insurer. Okay. I was on good money, you know. Couldn't claim Universal Credit until May because I had savings.
Right, let's just dig into that. Do you know the numbers?
I think it's like if you've got more than about £6,000, I think it is, in savings, then you can't claim.
If you have over £6,000 in money savings and investments, your payment will be reduced by £4.35 for every £250 you have between 6 and 16. So it could, if you've got enough in savings, be reduced to zero. And it was for you. It was for you until you'd eaten into your savings.
Yeah.
Okay. Funny that, because I read this morning the budget was penalising savers. I'm glad you can laugh. Yeah. Carry on.
I mean, well, you know, if you don't laugh, you end up crying.
Yeah, I'm sure you do.
So eventually I get to May and I've whittled down my savings down to next to nothing, you know, or to below the limit, whatever. Yeah. They still take off that chunk as well that you just mentioned, even off the 6,000 as well. Right. So I claimed housing benefit and universal credit because I'm in Essex, literally just over the border from, I mean, it's like 300 yards, it's ridiculous, right? But because I'm in Essex, there's a cap on how much housing benefit you get.
Okay.
That is capped at £1,000 in my case. My rent's £1,300.
Okay.
So I also got a job. Mate of mine got me a job with him working in a pub.
Yeah.
For every pound I earn working in the pub, I lose 55 pence in universal credit. So there have been some months where all my universal credit's gone. But that also eats into your housing benefit as well. So
how?
They take it off that as well. So every single pound that you earn, you lose it not just off universal credit, but also off your housing benefit. So you get to a situation where you might earn, I don't know, £800, say, in a month, which I've done, working part-time, but you've lost $600 or $700 in benefits as well.
And this is the...
Which means you're literally no better off. Yeah. You might as well not be working.
And this is the thing also beloved of right-wing journalists, which is they then, I think probably with a little bit more justification than usual, they can use that to claim that the system is discouraging people from working.
I don't think it rewards work.
No.
I think that's part of the problem. I can see why people would get to the point where they just gave up and went, sod it.
Yeah, I can as well, actually,
you know,
to be fair.
And I mean, you have to, and you have to also have these sort of, you know, it's roughly once a month or something like that, meetings where you're sort of proving that you're still looking for work. I mean, they tend to leave me alone at the job centre because they know I am. I was saying to your researcher, I think I probably applied for about 400 jobs, something like that. I've had numerous interviews, but I'm in this weird kind of place where I'm sort of, I guess, middle management, if you like, where I want to take, you know, if I want to take the step up, there's the number of people competing for the same jobs. Is insane. I lost out on one not that long ago, and I got this hilarious. There was it was for a regulatory body, and there were four interviews, four candidates rather that they picked out, and I was the top. I was in the top two essentially, and I got told that I beat somebody really, really senior from a rather large bank, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
But lost out to someone who had a bit more government experience, and I just wanted to bang my head off the desk.
Yeah,
it was,
you know. I'm sorry.
And then, you know, then I'm having interviews with agencies, PR agencies, where I say, it doesn't have, you know, either you're too, this is, you'd be great for this role, but we think actually you'd be better for a higher level role, but we don't have any.
Yeah.
It's just like, I don't care. Like, just give me a job.
How much of a shock to the system was the reality of the universal credit system?
I never claimed before in that way. I mean, I'd sort of had a couple of periods of a few weeks out of work kind of thing when I was younger and had to claim job seekers. And I remember going into the job centre and having a conversation with them and then just looking at my CV and going, well, there's nothing we can do for you.
Yeah. So you need to go to employment agencies or headhunters or you know, anyone who's just tuned in who's shouting somewhat unkindly at the radio, well, do something else then. You have. you've gone to work in a pub. You've tried to make sense of it.
Exactly right. There's just one thing on that, right? So a couple of weeks ago, I applied to work for Royal Mail for an agency.
Yeah.
And went through all the DBS checks, the license checks, the work. Told to turn up at the sorting office at 8 a.m. Monday morning.
Yeah.
So duly do that. Get there. There's another guy there waiting. We start chatting. He'd turned up a month earlier. And being told there was no job, but then he went back to the agency and they said, oh no, we got the dates wrong, it's next month. So he comes back the same day as me. We turn up, manager turns, comes down and says, sorry lads, there's no jobs. And we said, what? And he said, well, we told the agency something like 6 or 7 weeks ago, we don't have the budget for any relief work this year.
Good grief.
Yeah. Nice. So it's, you know, I went down the road for like a cleaning job, which I was told might be full time.
Yeah.
Only to discover that actually it was get out of bed at about 4:15 in the morning and do 5 till 9 Monday to Friday. I was like, but hold on, that's part time.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to get taxed massively because I've got a second job. I'm going to lose all my benefits and actually I'm going to be no better off. I'm having to have conversations with my ex-wife about whether or not I can actually have the kids for Christmas this year because I don't know if I can feed them for the week.
And coverage of the budget on a day like today portrays people like you, let's be kind, in a rather different light from the one that you're actually living in.
Well, for me, it's a really ironic situation given that I used to cover the budget every year.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I was a personal finance and economics journalist. I didn't miss a single budget until this year.
Yeah, but you weren't lying. You weren't pretending that everybody on Universal Credit was secretly living a life of Riley.
I worked for the BBC. So,
oh, there you go.
We got battered. We're always getting battered, aren't we?
Yes, you are. You are. I'm sorry, mate. So, I mean, that is incredibly helpful for people listening to the programme, but it's naff all use to you.
No, and the worst bit is I've got other friends, similar ages, similar levels of their career, who are having exactly the same sort of problems. I've got one friend who's just been kicked off Universal Credit altogether.
Why?
And he can't understand why.
Oh,
and I've ended up saying to him, look, my sister used to actually work for these guys. Call her and she'll be able to tell you. There's lots of like little flicks and tricks. You know, you play mental health issues, do this, do that, do the other, and then they have to take it more seriously. They escalate it. They investigate it properly. I had to go through something similar with that myself because initially they weren't paying me the correct amount of money and I didn't know how to deal with it because it is a bureaucratic nightmare. How you work in that system if you've never actually, if you're not used to it. It's bewildering.
And if you didn't have mental health problems before the process started, you might have
I don't even
mean that flippantly, actually, because, no, you know, if you're anxious or stressed, then this is just going to make everything measurably worse. Measurably worse.
It makes getting out of bed very difficult.
A month too early, man. I mean, that is extraordinary. And the Royal Mail, of course, is in private hands now, so not making a political point. I'm just reflecting on how there won't be any real system of accountability or complaint.
So people said to me, well, why didn't you go back to the agency? What was the point? You know, they obviously screwed up.
Go back and trust them again.
Or whatever. Why? Yeah, exactly. Why?
Go put another package of hope in their hands and see what they do with it this time.
You know, I probably am interviewing, I don't know, when the last one was last week for a boutique PR agency. By the end of the interview, I was like, even if they offered me a job, which I don't think they're going to do, it wasn't going to start until the end of January. We're talking about some charismatic founder of a PR agency.
Yeah.
You've probably encountered a few of them yourself in your career, right?
Yeah.
Working for those people, it's not fun. I've done it before.
No, tricky. I hope someone listening is I hope you've kind of given them and if anyone gets in touch, I'll pass on your details. But I know that is a bit meaningless in the great context of what you're describing, and you mentioned it was ironic, and that is a very mild word. The reality of what you're describing will be coming, and it's ironic given what you used to do for a living, it will be coming as a headline news to an awful lot of people listening to this who have previously been relying on the actual headlines and concluding that, you know, life is too easy for people like you, and the system is too generous. How angry are you with the currently unborn children of the poorest families in the country, man?
Not in the slightest. Don't you?
What's wrong with you, man?
Yeah, I know. I just one final point,
of course.
If I may. I think people don't realise that there's a lot of middle earners, or were middle earners, who are in this situation. I think this is an unreported kind of problem, actually. I'm seeing an awful lot of it on LinkedIn, because I basically spent half my day doom scrolling LinkedIn and people complaining about the recruitment process and all the rest of it.
And everyone is ripe, really, to be persuaded that it's all Rachel Reeves' fault. It would be harder to persuade you, given your professional background. But if you are confronting for the first time in your life these kind of difficulties, and someone is whispering in your ear, it's all Rachel Reeves' fault, I can see how people fall for that. Completely ignoring the last 14 years and the hat-trick of absolute horrors inflicted upon the country by precisely the same people now pretending that the problems Matt and many others are facing have somehow been caused by Rachel Reeves. Mate, take care. I think that was a fairly comprehensive interview with Matt. If you liked what you heard, I hate doing this and I'm very uncomfortable doing it, but if you liked what you heard and you think you might have some work for him, give us a call. It's 11:31. Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
New figures show there's a sharp drop in net migration to the UK in the year to the end of June. The difference between people coming here and those moving abroad was 204,000. The Chancellor has told LBC that she stands by her budget, promising it'll put more money in people's pockets in the long term. It included a freeze on income tax thresholds, meaning 1.7 million people will find themselves paying more. And a government minister has refused to rule out restricting jury trials only to the most serious cases in England and Wales. A leaked memo earlier this week suggested that juries could be reserved for murder, rape and manslaughter cases. LBC weather, rain developing across northern and western areas, cloudy but dry elsewhere, a high of 13 degrees.
This is LBC.
At Laithwaite, we go to great lengths to bring you great wine. We go far and wide. Searching high, and we mean really high, and low, and we mean stored deep underground in a cave low. Off the shelf? We don't go there. Off the beaten track? We certainly go there. And the best bit is, we even come to you. Order now at laithwaites.co.uk. Laithwaites. We stop at nothing to bring you great wine.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it. And there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
They did it again. Flour instead of flowers. On my birthday. And 95 minutes late. But it's hard to leave when you've shared so much. Your postcode, your gluten intolerance. Then I saw it. 25% off your first Ocado shop. Plus free delivery. And I just knew I'd found the online supermarket of my dreams. Ocado. Life delivered. Geographical restrictions. Min spend £60. Max saving £20. Charges and Christmas restrictions apply. New customers only. Terms at Ocado.com.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
33 minutes after 11, and all your money is being stolen from you to give to people who don't deserve it or need it. That's your news. I might go home now. Or start Mystery Hour early. That is how almost everybody else is going to be covering the budget. And, of course, most of them are exactly the same people that brought you Brexit, austerity, Boris Johnson and Liz Truss. All your money. They're taking all your money and they're giving it to scroungers. And poor children who haven't been born yet. Don't mention the pensioners, because we never do. But there it is. That's it. That's the story. That's the headline. That's it. It's all over. What's it actually like to be on Universal Credit? Who cares? Who cares what it's actually like? I've got headlines to write. Including, in the case of the Daily Telegraph this morning, the country is in the grip of full-throated socialism. You've got somebody who, you know, and I don't have more sympathy for middle-class people than I do for people who are poorer. I just don't. I have sympathy, identical sympathy, for people worried that they won't be able to have their kids this Christmas because they haven't got enough money to feed them. I don't care what your background is, but if you happened to do a job quite similar to mine back in the day, then obviously it's going to touch me in a way that's slightly different from if you used to do a job that's a million miles away from mine. But goodness me, the notion that people who call themselves journalists are describing an entirely unrecognisable universe to their readers and listeners and viewers and creating precisely what I just described. Rachel Reeves says, I am asking everyone to make a contribution, and the people who really, 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 really hate the idea of making a contribution, making a bigger contribution, are trying to persuade you that all that money is going to be going to poor children who haven't been born yet and this unaccountable army of skivers. Simon's in Watford. What's it really like, Simon?
To be honest, James, it's really, really tough. I find myself every month scrapping around to try and pay bills. Having worked all my life since being 15 years old, really.
Yeah.
I'm now 55. I have, very lucky, I've got my wife and four children. And we could afford four children.
Yes.
Up until the point of everything going to hell for me. My business went, I then got employment on a self-employed basis. That then went. Now I survive on Universal Credit. Should I say we survive on Universal Credit?
Yeah.
And I've taken a job back in March, self-employed as a courier. So I deliver parcels daily.
And you still qualify for Universal Credit?
Yes, because they have a minimum income floor. Before which they don't take off money for earning. But it's, I don't want to say I earn a pittance.
Sure.
For what I do, but it is a low paid, manual work. You know, it's not skilled. Sure. I worked in legal services for many years, and before that I ran a successful marketing company.
Yeah.
But at 55 years old, I apply for many, many jobs a week. I've lost count. I've stopped even using a tracker. I haven't had an interview since January, which I put down to my age.
Yeah.
I applied for a TFL taxi license for a minicab.
Yeah.
So I could do Uber, because I thought, you know what, I can drive. I used to drive many miles. I thought, you know, I'll do that. I applied on July the 31st, 2024. I got my first response from TfL in August this year.
A whole year. 13 months. You sent them £1,000?
Medical fees. No, medical fees, exams.
That's what you would have to find in order to get the licence.
Yeah.
I mean, that I suppose is the only bit of that story that's defensible. You can't, I mean, you have to jump through some hoops and provide some indemnities to be driving members of the public around. But
100%, James, I have no issue with having to do
the 13-month wait.
But the 13-month wait to hear back on your application, when they have asked for further information. I've been back to my doctor's surgery twice to get further information. You know, it's all just, it all just seems like these barriers just seem to get further and further away.
So what are mornings like this like then, when the gulf between what you know to be true and what you're hearing on your radio or seeing, you know, on the newspaper headlines in the supermarket? What is that bit like, if you don't mind me asking?
Potentially, I'm one of the sensible people that gave up buying newspapers many moons ago.
I knew that. That's why I said when you walk past the headlines in the supermarket, you see, psychic.
And the, you know, there's very few news agencies, as your previous caller said, that run unbiased.
Sure.
I think anybody that thinks I'm skiving and you know, costing them money, couldn't be further from the truth.
Yeah.
I've paid in all my working life. I've paid in potentially more than a lot of people have.
Yes, I understand that.
I've never claimed a thing up until 2019, when I have to.
Sure.
But now they're capping my housing benefit. I know your previous caller said the same thing.
Yeah.
So we're a family of six, and our rent is capped at £2,100. My rent is more than that.
Yeah.
Because I live in Harrow. I'm a northerner by birth. Yes, I could move back up north, but my children's lives are down here. That's not going to solve anything, but I have to find an extra £600 a month just to pay rent.
To stay in the house that you're in?
To stay in the house that we've been in for the last few years, because since I lost ours.
You lost the house as well as a consequence of losing
everything. 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 So, I'm not woe is me. I'm getting up every morning and I'm going to work. But without the universal credit, my children would be homeless.
And Kemi Badenoch thinks you live on Benefit Street. I don't know if you were aware of that.
Well, interestingly, I used to be a member of the Conservative Party. Well, I don't know whether that's interesting or not.
I was a
local councillor.
Go on.
And I really enjoyed it, and I felt like that was my way of giving back. But I'm looking at the Conservative Party today and I don't recognise it.
No, and you're not alone. There's plenty of good people who I may disagree with on many elements of politics, but I don't disagree on the basic decency of them, who don't recognise the Conservative Party in its current incarnation either. I mean, not least because it bears almost sole responsibility for an awful lot of the things that have happened to you, up to and including the invention of universal credit.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of people out there that have a lot of questions to answer who will never be brought to account. But that has been the way of the world for a long, long time. It's nothing new. It's not a...
Do you think it's worse? Because, like, I mean, we're all, Victor, we're very similar ages. I think it's worse than it's ever been. I mean, not just because you can just glance over the Atlantic for proof. It just, since Brexit, and I know I go on about it, but I think I'm right to, because it's 100 billion reasons why. I think it's got worse since then. I think the liars have never had it so good, personally. I'm interested whether you agree.
I don't disagree with what you're saying in any way. I think Brexit has a lot to answer for. I was a Stay person. I was a Remain.
Sure.
I still am a Remain. I can't believe that we shut ourselves off from markets that were available to us in such a brutal way. That said, you know, there is another side to that argument. Fair play to them. The Conservatives, even Labour, you know.
Yeah.
They used to stand for very good morals. And then you look at them today and they're just grabbing every pound of flesh that they can.
And trying to fend off unhappiness on their own backbenches and trying to...
Well, that's all the budget was about, wasn't it?
I think a lot of it was, yeah. But, I mean, you could benefit from it. Your children are probably a bit too old, are they? But people in exactly the same situation as you will benefit from the abolition of the two-child benefit cap.
I wish that it had been, you know...
A few years ago.
A few years ago. You know, my two eldest are young adults now.
Yeah.
Two of them still qualify for child benefit. But, you know, that would have made a huge difference to me in the last few years.
And I don't know what the image is that people have been encouraged to have in their mind, but probably some sort of feckless, chain-smoking single mother with 12 children hanging from her waist. That's very deliberately created in the minds of people, and the last thing they want is for people to imagine families, and I'm not going to say families like yours, Simon, I'm going to say families like their own. Families,
yeah, exactly.
Like, if you've got three or four children, it's families like yours that benefit from the abolition of the two-child benefit cap, and yet this, you know, the 100%. Mythical, or not mythical, but the unrepresentative Channel 5 cliché, which Cammie Badenoch elected to play into fully yesterday with her Benefit Street rhetoric, is not the reality that we should all be looking for. Mate, I'd hate these phone-ins. I've got to be honest with you, because I always have to end by saying thank you, and that's all I can say. I can't have any... Again, as with Matt, if people, anybody listening has heard your backstory and heard your obvious work ethic and might have something for you, then we'll pass it on. But now I'm sounding like something out of a Charles Dickens novel. Simon, thank you, mate, and take care. You can't do this. You need to know the facts. So even if they're not comfortable listening or comfortable telling for our callers, because otherwise you leave the place absolutely free and clear for the liars and the fraudsters and the people pretending that Rachel Reeves' announcement is something that it isn't, and people pretending that the necessity of raising revenue was not caused by precisely the same people attacking her for raising revenue. And how are you going to attack her for raising revenue? By pretending that it's all going somewhere other than the hole they dug. I'll be at it all day. All day. Mark my words. And probably most of tomorrow as well. It's just gone 11:45. Simon Marks is on the other side of the news. We may have time for another call as well, or two. If we don't, then remember, Mystery Hour's at 12. And if you send me very, very plaintive and poignant messages about how hard you find it to get through to the programme at the best of times, but especially during Mystery Hour, then remember, if we take a guest just before the 12 o'clock news, us being creatures of habit, well, not me, but you being a creature of habit, means that actually your best chance of getting through is at the top of a Mystery Hour that follows a non-phone-in element of the programme. That's science, that is. It's 11:45.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Let's turn to the person, of course, who's at the heart of all the news and the headlines this morning, Chancellor Rachel Reeves, who joins me now. Having said before that it was all fully costed, last year you fixed the foundations. Can you assure my listeners now, read my lips, no more tax increases as and when you present next year's budget?
Look, no Chancellor can predict the future or write next year's budget, but I made my choices yesterday to get NHS waiting lists down, cut the cost of living and reduce the debt. But look, I've doubled the size of that headroom against our fiscal rules yesterday so that we can withstand the shocks, which I'm sure will continue to come our way.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast, back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it, and there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
In her framing shop, Sally's got an eye for precision, plus a computer full of customer orders and precious memories. There are locks on the doors and sensors on the windows. But what's securing it all is BT Cybersecurity, with business antivirus, cloud protection, and security awareness training. It helps stop threats before they strike, keeping sensitive business data safe. Because protecting your business takes more than just toughened glass and a steady hand. Cybersecurity is everyone's business. Search BT Business Cybersecurity.
At Lathwaite, we go to great lengths to bring you great wine. We go far and wide, searching high, and we mean really high,
and low. And we mean stored deep underground in a cave low. Off the shelf? We don't go there. Off the beaten track? We certainly go there. And the best bit is, we even come to you. Order now at Lathwaite's.co.uk. Lathwaite's. We stop at nothing to bring you great wine.
They did it again. Flour instead of flowers. On my birthday. And 95 minutes late. But it's hard to leave when you've shared so much. Your postcode, your gluten intolerance. Then I saw it. 25% off your first Ocado shop. Plus, free delivery. And I just knew I'd found the online supermarket of my dreams. Ocado. Life delivered. Geographical restrictions. Min spend £60. Max saving £20. Charges and Christmas restrictions apply. New customers only. Terms at Ocado.com.
Do you know your state pension age? No. Maybe you're not sure. Or you don't know how to check. It's so quick and easy to check online. All you need is your date of birth. Knowing your state pension age helps you think about your future. So check yours today. Search state pension age on gov.uk and simply enter your date of birth. State pension age. It's good to know.
James O'Brien on LBC.
11:49 is the time. Mystery hour is around the corner. No mystery about who we turn to for a Rosetta Stone, a skeleton key to unlock and explain the mysteries of American politics. Are there any mysteries? Just imagine the worst imaginable scenario, and it's probably already happened. But Simon Marks is the man to whom we turn, the oracle, indeed. And he joins me now live from DC. Shall we start with the perfectly normal, according to Donald Trump, practice of coaching Russian politicians on how to get into Donald Trump's good books?
Simply astonishing, James. This relates, of course, to President Trump's special envoy, Steve Witkoff, who I think it's fair to say in an earlier age would already have been arrested and charged with treason. Yep. Based on the leaked transcripts of what we have seen as a result of Bloomberg's dogged reporting of a call that he placed to a top Kremlin aide, Yuri Ushakov, in which Mr. Witkoff, who, let me remind you, is Donald Trump's special envoy on the Russia-Ukraine war, not President Putin's, was advising Yuri Ushakov on how he ought to communicate with the White House with regard to the possibility of this 20-point peace plan that President Trump presented as his peace plan, even though, and I am not making this up, we now know that these were 20 Russian talking points that Mr. Witkoff and his team basically ran through Google Translate from Russian into English and then stuck a White House seal at the top of the piece of paper and said, right, there's our peace plan for Ukraine. It is simply astonishing. And President Trump is defending this as all part of the normal process of striking a deal, which just underscores how little clarity he has about the art of international statecraft. And also how willing he is to overlook what appears on the face of it to be an astonishing act of treachery by his special envoy, who in European capitals must now be considered a completely busted flush.
I mean, again, no exaggeration, no word of a lie, but still, for the millionth time during our conversations, it's still somewhat incredible, somewhat impossible to believe. And the meat of the message was suck up to him, tell him he's wonderful, congratulate him, mention the eight wars he thinks he's solved. I mean, it was kind of like how to be a sycophant by Steve Witkoff.
Yes, and so basic. Yes. I mean, you would think that the wily men who surround President Vladimir Putin would already probably have figured out that Donald Trump really likes a multi-point peace plan because that's what he's presented with regard to Gaza. So they probably already knew what Mr. Witkoff was telling them, which is if you really want to win the old man over, you should go with a multi-point peace plan. I mean, it completely beggars belief.
He can get his head around the simple of it. I suppose the big story in DC this morning is this shooting. It's not a shooting that will prompt enormous responses from the gun lobby as to why access to guns in this country is not a problem at all, because the shooter on this occasion is from Afghanistan. So the treatment by the White House and indeed by much of the American media will be very different from how it would be if, for example, it was a young American doing it in a school.
Well, I think the response from the gun lobby will actually be, as it would have been, even if it had been a young American in a school, we need more guns.
Yes,
I mean, then they would argue you need more guns in schools. Now, what has President Trump's immediate response to this been? One, to order 500 more National Guard troops to patrol the streets of a city where not only are they not needed, but after a judge has ruled their presence is illegal, yes. The administration continuing to battle against that. But also doubling down, of course, on President Trump's plan to close America's doors to all refugees except white Afrikaners from South Africa. Again, I'm not making this up. After we learned that the suspect in this case was a 29-year-old Afghan who had entered the country in 2021 as Joe Biden was seeking to offer some refugee status to some Afghans, many of whom had assisted the United States in its military occupation of Afghanistan. We don't know if this individual was one of those, but this feeds straight into Donald Trump's ability to say Joe Biden opened the floodgates to illegal immigration in the United States. We now need to double down on sealing America's doors and engaging, picking up the pace of mass deportations.
I thought, and I could be going a bit mad, I remember an interview with a US Army paratrooper who had come from Afghanistan in January. I was just trying to find it. I thought they'd already put a ban on all Afghans coming into the United States
back in
January.
Well, they have.
Oh,
they,
sorry.
They have. No, no, you're
so
absolutely
this is another
right.
Ban.
They have.
It's
they've
another...
already shut the door.
Yes.
I mean, it's another ban. I mean, he repeats these things because he wanted to sound dramatic last night.
Right.
But this country's doors is already, that they are already closed to all refugees from conflicts all over the world, whether it's the Sudanese, whether it's Palestinians from Gaza, Ukrainians, absolutely closed, with the singular exception of white Afrikaners who claim that their farms have been expropriated by the South African government without compensation, even though they haven't been. For white Afrikaner farmers and their families, the doors of America are open.
So white liars welcome, but Afghans fleeing the Taliban, having helped allied troops fight against them, not welcome.
Doors completely closed.
And of course, this animosity towards South Africa, post-apartheid South Africa, we should say, because that's probably relevant, extends to next year's G20.
Yeah, there is a massive issue now for Keir Starmer to address. As you know, I just got back from last weekend's G20, which South Africa hosted. Mm. Next year's is being hosted in Florida. The Trump administration claims it's being hosted in Miami under the presidency of the G20, which will be Donald Trump. It's actually not being hosted in Miami. It's being hosted at a city right next door to Miami called Doral, where President Trump's golf club just happens to be located, and that is where he is planning to welcome all world leaders of G20 countries, except for South Africa, because last night, doubling down on the disinformation that he's embraced about South Africa, continuing to claim there's an unreported white genocide taking place there, he said South Africa will not be welcome. Keir Starmer and other European leaders are going to have to take a stand and decide whether they are willing next year to participate in G20 events at Donald Trump's golf club, at which South Africa is going to be excluded. And for the Prime Minister, this is particularly problematic because he, the UK, is going to be the G20 president in 2027. Mm. So someone from Britain's got to receive the gavel from Donald Trump next year. And this at a time when number 10 can't even bring themselves to say there is no white genocide taking place in South Africa. British officials in Johannesburg last weekend again refused to answer that question. They can't even bring themselves to say there's no white genocide. Are they going to show solidarity now that Donald Trump is threatening to throw South Africa out of the G20 club?
Just to double check, because you mentioned whiteness, white Christian Ukrainian refugees would now be banned from the United States of America under this latest iteration, or not?
The latest iteration of the law as it's been laid down is that a maximum of 7,500 refugees can come to the United States per year. That's down from 125,000 in the last year of the Biden administration. It says that lots of slots are reserved for white South Africans. They are specified in the law. Now, could the odd white Ukrainian get in? Could the odd Christian Nigerian get in? Maybe. But the vast majority of the slots are being reserved only for white South Africans.
And now to his renowned gentlemanliness. It was Piggy, I think, a couple of weeks ago, the name that he chose to direct at a female journalist. And yesterday he took to calling another female journalist ugly.
Ugly from ugly from the outside and from within. This a reference to the excellent reporter Katie Rogers of the New York Times, who dared to co-author a piece in that newspaper 24 hours ago about Donald Trump beginning to show less energy and less stamina in the presidency, falling asleep at various events, his schedule each day being designed so that it ends at 5 o'clock instead of dragging on into the evening. Some of his international travel, including that trip to the G20 in South Africa, being scrubbed. And if there's one thing we know that Donald Trump recoils from, it is any suggestion that he isn't anything less than a lion of a man. And he completely recoiled from it in a social media post, accusing the woman who wrote the piece, Katie Rogers, didn't touch the guy, the co-author, going after Katie Rogers and describing her as ugly, part of a long pattern of misogynistic remarks only over the last few weeks, never mind those stretching back years.
You've done it again. You brought it all in, an extraordinary amount of information and detail. You brought it in on time. Simon, thank you. We'll do it again very, very soon. You take care and stay safe. That attempt to intimidate journalists, which is a large part of the obedience in advance that, that autocrats and authoritarians seek to secure. If you missed my interview yesterday with Rutger Bregman, the a Dutch historian whose Reith lecture for the BBC was censored by the BBC because he accurately described Donald Trump. It is already, I think, up on YouTube, or will be later. Or you can listen back, of course, on Global Player or the LBC app. Can I be late for the news today so that I can play you the clip of Sheila being magnificent with the unelected bureaucrat that's been hanging around with Nigel Farage a lot lately? That's Nigel Farage, who definitely didn't take bribes from the Kremlin, or at least there is no evidence that he ever took bribes from the Kremlin to parrot Kremlin talking points. He parroted Kremlin talking points for free, I think, is probably the easiest way of expressing that opinion. And unlike, of course, his protege, close friend and leader of his party, various parties in Wales, Nathan Gill, currently doing 10.5 at His Majesty's pleasure. Anyway, someone called Zia Yusuf, despite nobody ever having voted for him, is currently being put up to appear on programmes like this.
The Chancellor did allude to increasing sanctions on Russia, and she said sarcastically, in humour, but sarcastically, I'm not referring, or I don't refer to the honourable member for Clacton. I mean, she was making a joke about the leader of
Rachel Reeves has made a habit of cracking jokes while destroying people's lives in this country.
Is he a Russian
asset?
She's already driven a farmer to suicide because
of the increase. Because of the increase,
is he a
you
Russian
obviously know the answer to that question, and
well,
I take exception.
I'm
sorry, I take exception to you asking me that question. Are you seriously asking me the question if Nigel Farage is a Russian asset?
Yeah,
that is your serious question as a host of an LBC show.
Yeah, I have.
Well, let me categorically say that not only is that not true, it is deeply offensive, again, to the millions of British people who support
reform
and support Nigel Farage. And I'm sorry, you know...
But you can't... Can I just ask... No, let me say...
The notion...
You cannot dodge questions about Nigel Farage by suggesting that I'm asking the question about people who are interested in voting for him.
I'm asking you whether you are serious about asking that question. Because I put it to you, that is not remotely serious.
Nathan Gill was one.
I'm also the presenter of an LBC show. I would also like to know whether or not Nigel Farage is a Russian asset. But if we can't get an answer to that question, remember, Sheila and I are just asking questions. I thought they were big fans of that. Here's two questions I'd really like answered. Number one is, did Nathan Gill ever say anything about Russia that Nigel Farage disagreed with? If so, what? In fact, that's such an important question, I'm going to ask it again. Did Nathan Gill, when he was receiving bribes from a Kremlin stooge to parrot Kremlin talking points in public discourse in the West, ever say anything about Russia and the Kremlin and Vladimir Putin with which Nigel Farage, who has not received bribes, as far as we know, would have disagreed with? And if so, what was it Gill said that Farage disagreed with? And the second thing I'd like to know is whether, as party leader, close friend and mentor, he ever took him to one side to ask why he was making so many speeches in defence of one of our enemies. There used to be a word for that. It begins with T.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, new figures show there was a sharp drop in net migration to the UK in the year to the end of June. The difference between people coming here and those moving abroad was 204,000. That's two-thirds lower than in the 12 months to June last year. Ben Brindle is from the Migration Observatory and has spoken to LBC.
For some people, there have been changes to work rules that the government, both this one and the one before, has increased the skill and salary thresholds. That means that some people can't get a work visa for an eligible job. Then for international students, for some, it might have made the UK a less attractive destination because they can't bring partners and children with them. That's then, you know, years being apart from their family.
The Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, says she stands by her budget, promising it'll put more money in people's pockets in the long term. It included a freeze on income tax thresholds, meaning 1.7 million people will find themselves paying more. Speaking to LBC, Ms Reeves has admitted it'll impact people, but other measures will ease the burden.
We've managed to keep the contribution that ordinary people pay as low as possible by things like introducing the gambling tax on remote, on online gambling, a council tax surcharge on properties worth more than £2 million, increasing the tax by 2 percentage points on income from renting out property. Those things were important so that we have a fair system.
The Office for Budget Responsibility says an external person may have been behind the early leaking of budget analysis yesterday. Rachel Reeves' statement was thrown into chaos after the OBR's forecast appeared online around 40 minutes before she announced her policies. An investigation is underway. Firefighters in Hong Kong are searching for hundreds of people still missing after a fire broke out in a high-rise block of flats. 55 people are now known to have died. Three arrests have been made. President Emmanuel Macron has confirmed that France will restore military service on a voluntary basis. The move comes almost three decades since conscription was phased out. The scheme is in response to the renewed threat of confrontation with Russia. And Pope Leo has arrived in Turkey for his first foreign trip since he was elected in May. He says he wants to appeal for peace and greater understanding among people of different religions and beliefs. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 17 at 96.73. The pound buys $1.32 and a euro 14. LBC weather, rain will develop across northern and western areas throughout the day. Cloudy but dry elsewhere with a high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
A message from TfL.
I saw him in the local news a few days after. His name's Rakesh. They had to put him into a coma just because I didn't look again at that turning. He had two kids. How did I not see his bike ahead of me? Well, I didn't look again. He didn't make it.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
Oh, is it that time already? Do you know, I don't know why I bother, actually. I told you 15 minutes ago that your best opportunity to get on a board that is, even by our standards, the busiest of the week is after we have done something on the programme at 11:45 that doesn't involve a phone-in element. Maybe you don't tune in till 12. And maybe my Radar figures, which have recently overtaken Radio 4 among 30 to 54-year-olds. I don't know whether I've mentioned that. Maybe they're a myth. Maybe they're a lie. Maybe it's fake news. I don't know. Maybe you don't tune in until 12 and then stick around to listen to Sheila. Maybe you're watching on TikTok and not even aware of the fact that this is also a radio show. You just thought I had a very strangely decorated sitting room. Because we are indeed live on TikTok. I've written a jingle. Do you want to hear it? Tickety-tockety-two. You know what to do. What do they do, Keith? Tap the screen, hit like and follow. That doesn't rhyme, but in Mystery Hour, you can then wallow. That was really bad, wasn't it? I'm sorry. If you've got a question to which you need an answer, 03456060973 is the number you need. And you will get through. I tried to spoil it. I tried to actually undo the, like, rubric of the programme. If the last bit of the show before Mystery Hour is not a phone-in, then people don't phone in anywhere near as quickly as they do when it is normal service. And here we are. There are currently four phone lines free on my switch, but only for about another 8 seconds. If the history is anything to go by, but It's true, and you ignored me. So if you can't get through in 10 seconds' time, it's your own fault for not jumping when I told you to jump. If you hear somebody else ask a question to which you know the answer, 0345 6060973. Perhaps the other question, or the other point I should make, is that if you are new to this feature, in which case you won't have known what I was talking about when I was telling you to ring in good and early, then it's very, very different. I think we could all agree it's very different from the other 14 hours of the week that we spend together. It's often very, very funny, so much so that it often comes with a laugh-out-loud guarantee. You will laugh out loud at least once between now and the end of the hour. It may not be because anyone has been intentionally funny, but nonetheless, you will laugh out loud, I hope. So be careful about drinking hot beverages, because you may end up laughing out loud at the moment of ingestion, and that could really spoil your keyboard or your computer screen or wherever you're listening. Your car. Terms and conditions. I don't need to tell you about the terms and conditions because I haven't told you about the prize yet. My favourite contribution of the week will win a Mystery Hour board game. Be Still My Beating Heart. A thing of unalloyed joy, entertainment, information, elucidation, illumination, all of that. And it's yours for free, gratis, if you make my favourite contribution of the week. You want to buy one? Because, to be honest with you, there's only one chance to win one once a week. Then you can head over to mysteryhour.co.uk. And just listen, think about the person in your life that most loves Mystery Hour. Then think, what am I going to get them for Christmas? And then think, oh, I know, I'll get them a Mystery Hour board game by going to mysteryhour.co.uk. Everyone's a winner. And if you're writing a letter for Santa Claus, I can categorically reassure you that there are now Lapland. We've got some in Lapland, so if you are writing your Christmas letter to Santa Claus, then rest assured that the elves have been busy and have cobbled together a few state-of-the-art Mystery Hour board games, yours for a very reasonable fee. And if you want the terms and conditions for the official grown-up competition, lbc.co.uk. I'm not joking about the TikTok. We are live on TikTok. I know you probably think it's full of people leaving parcels on doorsteps that blow up in the faces of people trying to steal them, or what else is on TikTok? All sorts of nonsense, influencers, all that, 6-7. But also me. I'm also there, live and uncensored most of the time, unless you say a naughty, in which case... What happens if we dump stuff when we're live on TikTok, Keith? Should I not have asked that question? Okay, can we just dump that last bit? No, because we're live on TikTok. Yeah, you can tell we're live. Mark's in Chelmsford. Mark, question or answer?
It's a question, James. It's a pleasure to speak to you, by the way.
Likewise, mate. Thank you. What a lovely thing to say. What have you got?
James, this has been bugging me for a while. I want to know, how does deja vu work?
I think we've had that question before.
Yesterday, when you were sleeping.
Oh dear, at least I found it funny. I do think that we've had that question before, but I can't remember the answer, so there's a lot going on here. So this is deja vu, but not, because I do think that it did happen before, but I can't remember the answer, which makes me think maybe we didn't, maybe I dreamt that someone asked what deja vu...
I'll tell you a little story. I remember when I was a child in primary school, I remember like having a dream or something that I was standing in a huddle with my friends.
Yes.
And then a couple of days later, I was actually in the playground with the group of friends I had pictured. And I thought, how did that happen? I pictured this happening, and now I'm here living it.
It's a very strange feeling, isn't it? That you just sort of have a sense that this thing that has happened before, but they couldn't possibly have happened before, but it's definitely happening now.
Happening. Exactly. How?
How does it work? How does deja vu work? You're on. I mean, it's my fault if it has happened before and I can't remember the answer. The fact I've got the amount of times I haven't been able to remember the answer to a question that we've had before doesn't really qualify as deja vu. You're on. I'll find out for you, Mark.
Yeah.
I'll do my best.
Thanks.
Something to do with, I can't remember what it's something to do with, but how many people have got deja vu now with me saying I can't remember the answer to a question? Thank you, Mark. Paul's in Shaftesbury. Paul, question or answer?
It's a question, please, James.
Carry on, Paul.
And like your previous caller, this one's been bugging me since 1969.
Oh, well, marvellous. Better late than never. Let's get it. Let's see if we can get it sorted.
Well, in ever-increasing amounts. In 1967...
Oh, Hitler went to heaven. Oh, no, that's not the song, is it? Carry on.
Not quite.
Hitler went to Devon.
I took my O-levels.
Oh, yes.
And I buggered up my maths O-level.
I don't know if you can say that. You said it twice now. But, muffed. Can we say messed? Muffed. Miffed. Anyway.
Mucked.
Yes, mucked. Mucked is good. Carry on.
Anyway, I couldn't remember how many square yards were in an acre.
Okay.
So that mucked
and
up.
You've waited since 1967 to find out.
No, it gets longer than
sorry.
That. I think it's 2,300 and something. But anyway, no good to me now.
Yeah.
Because in 1969, I took my A-levels and everything was in metric.
Oh, yeah.
And everything was in multiples of 1,000. And yes. Life is simple. So everybody since 1967 has been educated in the metric system. So why do we have miles per hour on our road signs? And why does James O'Brien talk about a 22-inch rat when 22 inches isn't even the imperial system?
That was a while ago. I must have read it out in a newspaper. It's kilometres pretty much everywhere else, isn't it?
You go across the channel, you press a button on your car dashboard, and everything is
in kilometres. Is this a motoring question?
Kilometers.
It's not a motoring question. Is it a motoring question?
No, it's not.
Are you sure?
Because you've got 22-inch rats, you've got half-inch Guinness heads.
Yeah.
It's everybody's using inches.
Is it not just how? I mean, I think some of the in common parlance will just be habituation, won't it? It'll just be.
Yeah, but it's 60 years. We're headed for.
But I'm saying the road signs, if we're confident it's not a motoring question, that is a government decision. It wasn't a government decision for me to describe a 22 inch rat or a half inch head on a pint of Guinness, was it? But it's a government decision. It's a government decision not to go kilometres.
I think I know why. Educate everybody.
Well, it's the speedometers.
Yeah, but speedometers, you press a button on the speedometer.
You do now, but you didn't in 1960. You didn't in 1967.
Yeah, but it's been 58 years.
Yeah, but that's not. I mean, it would have been a little bit. But even then, this is definitely correct. Even when they brought in the digital thing that you've got. I don't know that I have got that on mine, but even if I did have it, there would still be cars that didn't. So you couldn't change the measurements on the roads because there'd still be people driving in miles on roads that were measured in kilometres.
But that's an excuse for never, ever doing it.
Which we never will. Yeah, ergo, I'm QED. Go me.
You're quite convinced of that.
It's a very good answer. You've got to concede.
Well, it's an answer.
It's a very good answer, I think you'll find.
No, because, anything can be converted.
Yeah, but it can't. Not if everybody's still married to the old way of doing things.
Well, the only people that are married to it are people that are educated in the imperial system, which means they're over 75.
But that's not true, is it? Because I'm also married to it, and I wasn't educated in the imperial system because it's the system I grew up with.
Yeah, but bad habits can be persistent.
This is a hill I'm prepared to die on. It is impossible to change it because it is so baked into our infrastructure. And when do you change it? When would you have changed it?
Well, the Swedes managed to change from one side of the road to the other.
That's
and
different.
Everybody was converted.
That's different.
Well, really, they had a day when everybody moved over. So yeah,
but the steering wheel stayed in the same place.
Yeah. Well, they didn't. They moved the steering wheels over a period of time.
Exactly. The steering wheels the next day were in exactly the same place that they were in before.
Yeah, but your speedometers can be changed.
They can now, but they couldn't then, and they never changed it. Therefore, we're in exactly the same position today that we were in 1967. Every single road user is married to miles. I'm not going to give myself a round of applause, but I'm almost certainly correct. And also, you'd have to change all the signs. That cost a fortune.
Well, yeah, I must admit, Rachel had have an awful turn.
All of them? All of the signs?
Yeah, well, only the French have changed all their 90 kilometres an hour to 80 kilometres an hour, and they just stuck a piece of tussling over the top.
Yeah, but you couldn't do that on there. That's just one. That's one digit. That's one character. This would be the whole thing, wouldn't it? This would be the whole. They'd have to change the numbers and the metrics.
Yeah, but you could do that over a wee while.
And the milestones? You have to get rid of all those lovely old milestones that we like to see as we make our way around the country? Charing Cross would cease to be the distance from London. I honestly think, and I'm being a bit facetious, but I honestly think that it's too baked in. And now you're going to bombard me with countries that have managed to do it, most obviously probably Ireland. How big is this hill you're dying on, asks Bruce, which is actually a very good question. So anyway, why? I mean, do you not remember? the noise. It was one of the early signs of Brexit when a bunch of weirdos went bonkers about not being able to sell apples down the market in pounds and ounces anymore, as if it was some sort of a fact. That probably was actually one of the earliest seeds of the Brexit madness. People pretending to be outraged that market traders were going to have to sell exactly the same amount of apples, but the same number of apples, but would now be weighed according to a different metric. So he said, I'll have six apples, please. I said, that's a pound. So I have six apples, please. And I say, well, that's, you know, a kilo and a bit or whatever, or not quite a kilo. And that, of course, was the early onset of Brexit derangement syndrome. Thank you, Paul. Ian's in Harlow. We'll find out what he wants to do after this.
This is LBC.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it, and there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
At Laithwaite, we go to great lengths to bring you great wine. We go far and wide. Searching high, and we mean really high, and low. And we mean stored deep underground in a cave low. Off the shelf? We don't go there. Off the beaten track? We certainly go there. And the best bit is, we even come to you. Order now at laithwaites.co.uk. Laithwaites. We stop at nothing to bring you great wine.
At Lidl, we won't be beaten on price in a range of Christmas mains. Like our Birchwood Fresh British Whole Turkey, Smoked Gammon Joint and more. All at an unbeatable price. Lidl. More to value. Selected products on sale from 27th of the 11th and price match in most major UK supermarkets until 24th of the 12th. See Lidl.co.uk/LBTV while stocks last, exclusions apply.
This is LBC Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973.
It's a lovely way to break your duck. You know when people ring in and say they're very nervous? That never really happens on Mystery Hour. And listen, don't be a clever clogs now if you're waiting to talk to me. Ian, I'm looking at you. Don't come on and say, oh, I'm very nervous. It never really happens on Mystery Hour. No one gets nervous on Mystery Hour. So if you've listened for a while, or even if you've just tuned in by accident for the first time today, and you think, oh, do you know what? I'd quite like to get involved. I'd quite like to join in. But, oh, I don't know. I'm a bit nervous. This is a lovely way, actually, to break your duck. And I do actually have a little bit more room than usual on the switchboard, almost certainly as a consequence of talking to Simon Marks for 15 minutes just before it started. 0345 6060973 is the number you need. That was a very polite way of saying that a lot of the early callers who got through were a bit rubbish. So now's your chance to not be rubbish and indeed get on the radio by dialing the usual number. If you hear somebody else ask a question, i.e. what's happening when we think we are experiencing deja vu, or why did the UK never go metric? Most obviously on the roads, and indeed the Republic of Ireland is a model of how possible it is. Although I bet they got help from the European Union, which is no longer an option that's open to us, but we could have done it prior to 2016. Why did we never start measuring our roads in kilometres instead of in miles? Is it just because of all the crackpots who also went crazy about the idea of going metric on market stalls? Or is there something more sophisticated, more nuanced going on? And, of course, whatever question you've got, that is how it works. You ask a question and someone else answers it, and the rest of us walk away enlightened, illuminated, educated, elucidated, and just a tiny bit more knowledgeable. Ian is in Harlow. Ian, question or answer?
Question, please, James. And I knew you were looking at me, so I won't try and be a smarty pants.
Thank you. I do appreciate that, Ian. Thank you.
My question is, why do cats derive any direct benefit from purring?
I'm not joking now, but I think I just got deja vu. Have we had that? I just need to talk to Keith. Talk among yourselves. Have we had that before? We haven't had that before. I don't think we've either had it very, very recently, or I've just had deja vu. Yeah, no, we've had why do they purr, which is kind of the same answer. But I would say we'd had that quite recently, but I don't think we have had that quite recently, which means you just gave me deja vu, including your voice, Ian. Have you been haunting
my... I've spoken to you before.
No, I know, but have you been haunting my dreams?
Very likely.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
That's okay, can't we? Everyone needs a hobby. Do cats get any benefit from purring?
Yeah, it's a little bit different from why do they purr.
Yes, it is.
Because I can answer that in some respects. So I know that my cat will respond to being stroked or coached with a purr. But she would also sit on the footstool and purr for no apparent reason. And it's just got me thinking, you wouldn't do, even in the animal world, I don't think you would do something that you didn't derive some kind of benefit from.
Yeah, what do they get out of it? Yeah, true. I like it. I like cats as well. Until I get older, I got closer to my cats.
Family friends.
They are lovely. But the old fella, he purrs all the time if we let him on the bed, and it's hard to push him off again, even if he's keeping you awake. Thank you, Ian. Gary's in Crewe. Gary, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on, Gary.
Why is it when you get an itch on your back?
An itch.
And you need someone to scratch it. So you get your wife or whoever.
Blimey. Well, what do you mean, whoever? Who else do you get?
Well, so they start scratching back. No, left. Down a bit. Up a bit. Yeah, there it is. No. Yeah. But they never get the right spot. Why is that?
I don't recognise what you've described.
You don't?
What do you mean you don't?
So, you got an itch on your back, you need it scratching.
Yeah.
Right. So you will say to your wife, can you just scratch that for me?
Yeah.
Right. So it starts to scratch. No, it's not there. No, go left. No, yeah. up. But they never find where you need them to scratch it.
Do you recognise this, Keith? And it moves, the itch moves.
Well, I don't know if it moves, but they never get it.
Okay, you're on. Why is that? I mean, do you know what the problem here is?
No.
I've never found anyone who's prepared to scratch my back for me. Not even joking. I feel I haven't lived. I've done something wrong. 25 years of marriage. 24 minutes after 12, you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Mystery Hour continues. If you can answer any of the four questions that are already on the board, you know what to do. If you have a question of your own that's not on the board, then you know what to do. Alistair is in Leon C. Alistair, you're live on Tickety Tockety Do. You know what to do. Carry on.
Hello there, James.
Question or answer?
Top man.
Yes.
So my question concerns our good friend, the garden earthworm. So obviously, the earthworm tunnels around the back gardens and parks of this wonderful country.
Yeah.
But what happens during the summer when there's periods of drought and it's very hot and the ground gets all hard? Do they just get stuck under there? Like, what happens to them? Where do they go?
Do they hibernate?
I don't know.
Nor do I.
So these are the questions that keep me up at night.
So you never see an earthworm when the soil is dry?
Well, sometimes they kind of just appear all dry. Look, you mentioned cats a second ago. My cat will bring them in and they're all dried up and shriveled.
What, in summer?
In the summer, yeah. You never see one doing well during the summer, do you?
No. Well, your cat's probably dug them up while doing its business in the garden, hasn't it? Which makes you wonder that perhaps they do. I bet they hibernate or close. Because there's no other. It's Occam's razor, this, isn't it?
Well, yeah, because obviously, you know, they don't die out, do they? They come back.
Exactly that. So they must still be there. It's not like they go into a cocoon. I bet they go into a vegetative... I bet they go to sleep.
Yeah. Well, if you could find out for me, that would be great.
I'll tell you what, I'm making myself laugh this week. I don't know if anyone else is joining in. Thank you for that. Where do worms... Doobie-doobie-doo. No? Okay. Cecilia's in Tottenham. Cecilia, question or answer?
Good morning. Afternoon,
evening, night, whatever.
Answer.
Carry on.
An answer. Oh, and I'm nervous, so bear with me.
It's only me. You can't be nervous. It's Mystery Hour. You. Nothing bad ever happens during Mystery Hour. It's like the haberdashery department at Peter Jones.
Well, it's an answer to the deja vu question.
Yes. Oh, yes.
And this takes some explaining, but I will be brief and I hope I'll be clear with it. It's three factors, really. One is the way that your brain stores words and information and how it puts it into containers. And it's called conceptual cognitive metaphor theory or critical metaphor theory. When you have an experience, or say you've got a friend called Mark, you know everything about your friend called Mark in a container in your brain called Mark.
Oh, yeah.
So that contains everything, where he lives, what sort of bike he's got, what he eats regularly. And you'll have containers like that. I'm using the examples of your caller about it, you know, his experience of the deja vu. He'll have containers in his head for all four of those friends.
Yeah.
And something will happen, like, I know, a crisp packet will be opened and it'll show a packet of crisps.
Yeah.
And then your brain goes into, like, a momentary flash of hyperdrive where it takes all four of those containers for your friends.
Yeah.
And then it coalesces it into a little story instantly. It's just like a flashbang. Everything you know about those four people or that in that, in the context of being in the playground.
So, like, is it like a leak? Is it like a leak from one container into another, or no?
It's more of a sort of nuclear reaction of all four containers colliding.
And it throws up something that hasn't happened, that feels like something's happened before, even though it hasn't happened before.
Because all those aspects of that are familiar to you already. But it's a combination of neuroscience. And the way all that information, you know, the brain never forgets every word, everything you ever hear in life.
It's like one of those wheels with lots of different things. You know, when you play a game and you've got to come up with something, you spin six wheels, you get six different words. And you've got to come up with a story that uses those six words. It's like the wheels are spinning.
There you go. Yeah.
And they're actually coming up with something that actually hasn't happened, but feels like it has. So look, there's Keith.
In nanosecs,
there's Keith. There's Eleanor. There's my teacup. There's Cecilia. All of these things have compartments in my head, but for some reason, when you open that bag of crisps, they all convened and created what feels like a memory, but can't be.
No, it can't be. But it's very real because the information is real and stored. So it is a memory.
But it's not a memory.
But it's not.
It's made of memories.
Yes, it's a memory recipe.
This is brilliant, and you've explained it so well. Can you say the fancy words again? The conceptual cognitive conumbidum.
The field of studies would be cognitive linguistics,
of course,
which it covers neurolinguistics as well to explain how the neural pathways fire in the brain.
Yes.
And it's written about quite extensively by somebody called George Lakoff and Mark Johnson in a brilliant academic book called Metaphors We Live By.
Oh, yes.
It's been argued about because it contradicts what Noam Chomsky's idea of language retention was, which is structuralist. Mm. So this is called post-structuralist linguistics and thought.
It's not a normal phone in this, is it?
It's not a normal subject. There are thousands. Research, and it's very exciting.
You're brilliant, you are. I think I can guess what your qualifications are. Can I have a go? Are you studying for a master's in linguistics and cognitive theory?
There you go.
That's fantastic. What's your thesis going to be about?
It's going to be critical conceptual metaphor theory around green energy and how it talks about between us all.
Magnificent. Have a round of applause. I wish I could give you more.
Thank you.
Absolutely sensational answer to a brilliant question. Tim Humphrey has your headlines.
Figures from the Office for National Statistics show net migration into the UK fell by nearly 70% in the year to June. The difference between the number of British people who left and people who arrived stood at 204,000. Rachel Reeves says it was her budget for her priorities after the Conservatives said her tax and spending plans were for people on Benefits Street. Scrapping the two-child benefit cap, freezing income tax thresholds and introducing a so-called mansion tax were among the announcements. Three men have been arrested over a fire in Hong Kong, which has killed at least 55 people. Hundreds are still missing in tower blocks in the Tai Po district. LBC weather, rain in the west and drizzle in the east across England, some sunshine in Scotland and Northern Ireland, and a high of 14 degrees.
LBC.
Deals! Deals!
Deals!
Mega Monster deals! Unbelievably epic savings! Mind-boggling deals!
Shh!
At Screwfix, our Black Friday deals are so good, we don't need to shout about them. Save on everything you need to get the job done. Power tools, safety and workwear, landscaping and outdoor, and electrical. On the app, in-store or online. Don't miss out. Deals must end 1st of December. Screwfix, no stopping you.
When you go abroad, everyone knows the best way to make yourself understood is to just say everything in English, but louder.
Four beers, please, garçon!
If only there was a way that could work with your advertising campaign. Well, there is. And you're listening to it. Because when you amplify your advertising with radio, 40 million listeners every week get the message. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Hi, I'm Andrew from New Zealand and Australia travel specialist, Travel Essence. For a tailor-made holiday unlike any other, find your way to us. Our local knowledge saves you time and money, and our experience is your guarantee of quality. We are also members of ABTA and ATOL. Amazing journeys down under start at travelessence.co.uk.
When you buy a BMW approved used electric car, there are no surprises. You'll find the largest range and the widest choice. Naturally, every car has been meticulously checked by qualified BMW technicians. Hardly a plot twist. And they always come with a battery health report and at least 12 months unlimited mileage BMW warranty. Just as you'd expect. BMW approved used electric cars. Nothing new here. Search BMW approved used electric. Obviously.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973.
It is 12:34 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Mystery Hour continues. Questions that still need answers. A brilliant answer on Deja Vu. Some people think Cecilia should have got a Ray Liotta, but absolutely not. If the bloke who wrote the book had rung in, then he'd get a Ray Liotta, but you don't. George, what's his chops? Bake off. Why did we never change to kilometres an hour in the United Kingdom? Other countries have managed perfectly well. Why didn't we? Probable answer, because we're bonkers. Because we're not serious people. And arguably, we never were. Cats, why do they purr? Ian wants to know. When you've got an itch and someone scratches it, why does it move? I like that question, the more I look at it, from Gary. And where do earthworms go in the summer? Which I think I've almost certainly answered correctly, because there can't be any other answer to the one that I came up with. The answer is not Magaluf. Where do earthworms go in the summer? Daniel's in Hull. Daniel, question or answer?
Morning, James. Question.
Carry on.
So I was watching a David Attenborough show the other day, and I was wondering, do animals actually get any enjoyment out of eating raw meat and leaves and that?
What do you mean, and leaves and that? That was a perfectly reasonable question, but since when did they have a side salad?
Like herbivores.
Oh, I see. That, so you mean different animals. What do you mean by enjoyment?
Like, you know how we get a dopamine or something from eating a cake?
Do they
get that same thing, or is it just they need to eat?
This is a really good question, isn't it? Because, I don't know, have you got any pets?
I got a few, yeah.
How many?
A few dogs, like 5 dogs.
Flipping it.
Fish.
Yeah?
Yeah.
The range of...
You feed the dogs...
Pet food now, yeah, exactly. Like, yeah. You can go to pets at home.
Some of it eat the same as meat.
Exactly, and there's one that, you know, some of them advertise now as saying the food was tested on humans. Shouldn't it be? To make sure it's healthy. But, so, I mean, the difference in price between the bog standard stuff and the fancy schmancy stuff that...
Comes, you just eat it the same, don't they?
I don't know. You kind of... Everyone listen. I don't know. I don't know if I want to accept this question. Because one of the great pleasures in life for some of the people listening, not for me, mind, I'm too clever, but one of the great pleasures in life will be believing that their cat enjoys, you know, smoked salmon more than they would enjoy a tin of Whiskers. And that's what they get. That's where they get their little sense of joy from.
But yeah, the dogs do beg for my food on eating it. So
eat food. I mean, is there any way of knowing whether a hungry dog will eat anything? Well, no, there must be. I think I can answer this, actually.
Go on.
My little dog will leave the kibble.
Mm-hmm.
And eat, if I put some wet food on top of the kibble, she'll eat the wet food. But if she's only got kibble, if we've run out of wet food, then she will leave the kibble. She will eat it eventually, once she realises there's nothing else coming. But however full she is, if I were to put some wet food in her bowl, she'd scarf it down, even if she'd just eaten, you know, five tins or sachets. That's how posh we are. Sachets of dog food.
The wet food might just have a more pungent smell to it.
Well, then that means they enjoy the stuff with a pungent smell, doesn't it? More than they enjoy the stuff without.
Yeah.
I think that is probably the answer, but we want something a bit more scientific.
It's wild animals, do they actually like it? Yeah. More the question. Yeah.
How many fish have you got?
Oh, too many.
Too many to count?
Multiple tanks full of them.
Really? Just as a hobby?
It's just a hobby, yeah.
Good Lord. That's nice. That's hard work, though, isn't it?
The goldfish look after themselves.
Yeah, but you've got to clean
the tank every month.
How often do you clean the tank?
When it starts getting dirty, so it's like, every month or two.
Fair enough. I like it. Thank you, Daniel. Yeah. I mean, does a fish know what food it's getting? Highly unlikely. But I bet if you had two different things in the water, both perfectly edible for a fish, they'd go towards one and not towards the other. Do you remember that little craze when you could get fish to eat your feet? Do you remember that? That was so bizarre, wasn't it? And then it just disappeared as quickly as it arrived. Can't have been very... I don't know whether it was very good for the fish or not. Anyway, I digress. Thank you, Daniel. Do animals, whether domesticated or wild, enjoy some food more than another, or are they just sating their hunger? I suspect they do, but how would we prove it? Pete's in Farnham. Pete, question or answer?
Calimera, James, question.
Calimera, Pete, the canis.
James.
Yes.
I've just come back from Skiathos in Greece, and on the far end of the island, there's a freshwater lake, and it's inhabited by swans that also go on the beach.
Oh, how delightful.
It is delightful. My question is, are they owned by the king, like the swans in the UK?
Do swans migrate?
Yes.
Well, then they can't. I mean, if they've migrated, in this case to Skiathos...
Yeah.
And someone decides they fancy a swan for dinner.
Yeah.
I can't see how the king's jurisdiction would extend. Surely the king only owns the swans while they're here.
Well, Stavros the barman told me that the king, our king, owns the swans, but they don't serve them up in the taverna.
No. I don't know what countries do eat swans. We used to, didn't we, in Tudor times and stuff like that. You'd get a lot of meat on a swan, wouldn't you?
Very snappy.
Would you want a leg? I can't see. I mean, Stavros notwithstanding, I'm sure he's a stand-up guy, but I can't quite see how that would be enforceable.
Well, he seemed to think it would be.
It might have been yanking your chain. How many Uzos had you had at this point in proceedings?
At least four or five.
Yeah, that could be it, you see. Okay, I mean, when does... I mean, it's a simple question, really, is does the king's ownership of swans... It's not quite all swans. There is a distinction I can't quite remember. Given that they're migratory, who owns the king's swans when the king's swans aren't in his kingdom?
It's a good one, isn't it?
I like it. I like it a lot.
His mum's moussaka is very good as well.
Is it really? Does she make it on site?
Oh, it's beautiful. Beautiful.
Isn't it bizarre how many... Greek tavernas. I mean, the idea of them serving something pre-prepared would be absolutely anathema to them, wouldn't it? Even in quite good restaurants here, there's going to be quite a lot of stuff that's bought in, whether it's peeled potatoes or, you know, ready-made dishes. But you go to Greece, and I think it's the most underrated cuisine in Europe, by the way, Greek food. A good Greek taverna is going to set you up for, like, you wouldn't believe. You're on. I like that question. Does the king own the swans in Skiathos? Or, if you prefer, does the king still own the swans, even when the swans aren't in the king's kingdom? 0345-6060, Enya Efta Tria. Jane's in Inverurie, near Aberdeen. Jane, question or answer?
Answer, James.
Carry on.
Yes, you are right. Worms do hibernate in the summer.
Tickety-tockety-doo, you know what to do. Yes, this is. I'm just going to do a big celebration in silence for the benefit of people watching on TikTok, Jane. Are you ready? Could you just bear with me for a few seconds?
Sure.
Carry on, tell me more.
I have been studying worms this year because I'm writing a comedy novel about a displaced worm who, in a construction site, and gets pushed while hibernating for usually for 2 months over the summer, they hibernate.
What a lovely
and again
idea.
Over the winter.
Yes.
They actually can detect the weather.
So they move into a sort of, into a vegetative, they go
they
to
prepare.
Sleep. They what?
They prepare.
Really?
They prepare for it, yes. They dig like a toilet U-bend tunnel.
Yeah.
So that water can't get in, because that's one of the reasons they'll come out of a tunnel if it's yes. too wet. So then they'll cover themselves in mucus so that they stay dry. But they can tell when the weather's going to be very dry, and so they'll prepare and will go down quite deep out of the hard soil. And they'll do it again in winter with the frost, with the permafrost.
And so a cat could still dig it up, actually, if a cat was going to the toilet. They could still, I mean, that's how they've ended up being brought into Alistair's house.
They would have to dig quite deep. What sure. they do at night, they'll come out and breathe, and they'll latch on at the top of their tunnel hole. And nobody knows why they do this. Absolutely no one.
What a wonderful answer. How are you getting on with the novel? How are you getting on with the novel?
It's being edited. It will be out in January.
Is it your first?
Yes.
That's sensational. What's it going to be called, if you don't mind? You don't have to tell me.
It's Together in Electric Trees.
Together in Electric Trees?
Yes, it's a story of a hill in Scotland and all the inhabitants in it. And
that sounds absolutely charming.
The insects.
That sounds absolutely charming. Have a round of applause on me for the answer and for the imminent novel. Thank you.
Thank you.
How delightful. 12:43 is the time. Still got a few questions in need of answers, but probably still got room for a couple more questions as well. Mark's in Cavisham. Mark, question or answer?
It's a question. Thanks, James. Great show.
Thank you very much. Carry on.
The question is, when tigers are shaved, the imprints of their stripes are still embedded on their skin.
You've never shaved a tiger.
Well, once or twice, yeah, in my younger days,
oh,
yeah.
Fair
yeah.
enough. No,
on a late Saturday night, you know.
Takes all
no, but,
sorts.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, no, I was wondering really, why? Because obviously zebras and Dalmatians or anything like that don't have that, and I'm just curious why it would
that
be.
You said, I love that you said obviously. obviously zebras. Like, everyone's shaved a tiger and a zebra, and then just by way of a kind of control on this experiment, they've shaved a Dalmatian as well. And obviously zebras and Dalmatians don't have their fur pattern yeah. replicated on their actual skin, but tigers do. So it's on the skin. And it's not on...
Yeah, yeah.
And the question is why?
Yeah, why? I mean, does it happen? I know there's only one question, but...
How do you know? How do you know what happens when you shave a tiger?
Because a friend of mine saw it on a programme, some kind of documentary, and then we all talked about it and then Googled it, and it seems to be true. So nobody believed him.
Yeah? Okay. So, I mean, no one may know the answer to why. It's unique, isn't it? It's no two tigers are the same.
Yeah, that's right.
But that... It's not relevant, really, to the... And are you sure about zebras? I can't help thinking that if you shaved a zebra, the stripes might still be there as well.
Well, no, I don't think so, no, because you've seen, like, vet programmes where horses have been shaved and they're...
Yeah, but zebras aren't horses, mate. That's the crucial difference. Isn't it?
True.
If you shaved a zebra, it would look like a horse. How would you know it was still a zebra? Okay. I think you're right, and so we want to know why. I love that. 0345 606 09 73. Why, if you shave a tiger, and please don't try this at home, but if you did shave a tiger, how come its stripes would still be there on the skin, whereas if you shaved a zebra, it would be mostly black, I believe, as opposed to black and white stripes? Questions that still need answers. Why did we never go metric on our roads? Ireland has managed. Are managing. Why do cats purr? Why do itches move? Earthworms, brilliantly done. Tigers, not yet done. And food. Do we know that animals enjoy some foods more than others? Or are they just sating their hunger? And the swans. The swans! How many kings can a king swan? If a swan king could king swans.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Business Secretary Peter Kyle joins me to explain why so many of you will pay more income tax, plus why net migration has dropped sharply.
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or our new LBC app.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it, and there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
Hurry! Extra savings in Hillary's best ever Black Friday sale end soon. Until the 2nd of December, get an extra 10% off absolutely everything. That's on top of up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, control your blinds from anywhere with a half-price smart hub when you buy any electric blind. Don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. Conditions apply.
This Christmas at Tesco, get a tub of Quality Street chocolates for just £3.95, down from £6 with your Tesco club card. That's what makes it Christmas. Tesco, every little helps. Majority of larger stores, Quality Street 550 grams, end 2nd of December. Club card or app required.
Hey, Harry. Hello, mate. Any tips for the game?
If it's games you want, your best bet is to check out Bet Victor's Casino Games. They've got more games than you've had hot dinners. In fact, they've got more games than Las Vegas Gaming Convention's annual convention of games.
Lots of games. Got it.
Yep, there's over 4,000 slot games, including all your favourites like Big Bass Bonanza, live casino tables like roulette and blackjack, and casino games like Crazy Time.
Listen to Harry and make your best bet on Bet Victor Casino. 18+ gamblerware.org.
The congestion charge helps to reduce traffic in central London. To ensure it remains effective while incentivising the switch to electric vehicles, from the 2nd of January, electric cars will be charged a 25% discounted rate of £13.50 rather than the new daily charge of £18. To receive the discount, electric cars must be registered on AutoPay. Further discounts are available for other electric vehicles. Search TfL AutoPay. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
It is 12:49. That's almost it for today. We better squeeze in a few more answers first, if indeed we can, and then Sheila will be with you at one. Tiago is in Bristol. Tiago, question or answer?
I have an answer, James.
Carry on.
Regarding whether animals experience pleasure with food the same way we do. Well, they do. The mechanism is the same. Kind of evolutionarily, kind of food is a scarce. We evolved to kind of, you know, feel that those good feelings when we encounter high sugar, high fat sources of food. So they have the same kind of reward mechanism that we do as a whole.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, we as humans in our kind of layered experience of the world attaches a lot of things to food. Like we feel pleasure with food, to do with memories, comfort, which animals don't then experience the same way we do. Hence why an animal in a kind of normal environment, it's unlikely to become overweight. But then you think about animals that live very close to humans and dogs and how we can skew that sense of reward, how we end up with house pets that are overweight, because like us, they will continue to tap on that reward part of their brain.
So they think they get, so it works. Only they'd be the same as us. And my dog eating it kibble, turning its little nose up at the kibble that we give him when we give her when we've run out of fancy pants food that I haven't asked Mrs. O'Brien how much we spend on it because I don't want to know.
Don't get me started.
No, I won't.
I spend more money on my dog than I do on me.
Same with her. She spends more money on the dog than she does on me. That's for certain. But but she will turn her little nose up at it. This is our dog, not my wife. She'll turn her little nose up at the dry food until, you know, hunger demands that she eats it. But she will leave it in the hope that we'll serve up something nicer. And so it is speaking to exactly the same part of the brain that makes us go after the high calorie.
Yeah, the
food
high
that isn't very good
food,
for us, the high reward food. Lovely. Qualifications?
Well, I have a Whippet, which is a very fussy eating dog.
Oh,
to train her, they're not like Labradors, they respond to treats all the time. So I had to look into reward mechanisms on drugs, dogs' brains to try figure out the best way. I mean, she does respond to treats, but after a little bit, she's like, meh, not interested. So yeah. I had to work around that with praise and things. Yeah.
Round of applause for Tiago. Well played.
Thank you, Dan.
Thank you very much. It's technically not hibernation, it's estivation, I'm told by Richard. That's what a worm does during summer, estivation. So it's not quite hibernation. I'm not entirely sure what the difference is, but I imagine it's got to do with the depth of the sleep, sort of, in layman's terms. ASCII is in Lewisham. ASCII, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
So this is an answer to what benefit cats get from purring.
Yes.
So there are two primary benefits. One of them is social. Kittens will purr to signal to their mother that they're content and okay.
Yes.
And domesticated cats will sit in a weird kind of arrested development where they'll keep some of those kitten behaviors, like meowing most commonly now.
Okay.
But there's a second thing that's a little weirder. There is some research showing that the vibration at which cats vibrate when they purr helps accelerate healing if they're injured.
Oh.
So some, if you've ever come across an injured cat, you may catch it purring. It'll be hiding in a corner somewhere purring. That is thought to be because those vibrations accelerate bone and tissue damage healing.
Flipping heck. I usually issue a guarantee at 12 o'clock on Thursdays that you will know more by 1 o'clock than you did at the beginning of Mystery Hour. I'm pretty sure we smash it out of the park every week, but that's the one I'm taking away. That's absolutely extraordinary information. Kind of just does something about blood flow or something like that. Who knows? But it does... It does apparently it slightly accelerate the speed of recovery or the speed of healing. So when a grown-up cat is purring, it's a sort of throwback to its own childhood, saying, oh, I'm really happy, and this is what I do when I'm happy. But if I was out there in the wild dealing with predators and the rest of it, I probably would have grown out of this by now.
Yeah, at least on the social aspect of it. So when cats would also purr at each other, but it's difficult to tell how much of it is behavior from domesticated cats. Studying cats in the wild is difficult because catching them is a bit of a nightmare. But from that perspective, the social purring is a kind of arrested development thing. But the injury purring is something cats will do in general.
Qualifications?
I volunteer with a cat shelter. I've worked with Rescue Cat for quite a few years.
That's nice. Good for you. Round of applause for ASCII. 12:53 is the time. Graham's in Glasgow. Graham, question or answer?
It's an answer. Thanks, James.
Carry on.
It's about the crown ownership of the swans that the gentleman saw on holiday in Greece.
Mm.
No, they are not owned by the crown. The crown only own mute swans in England and Wales, and mute swans are non-migratory. They tend to stay. So mute swans in the UK, they won't really travel much further than 30, 40 miles from where they hatch to where they set up as adults. So the answer is no.
They're going to stay put.
Yeah, I mean...
They might move a little bit in
super land. Swans.
Yeah. So the only ones that the monarch owns...
in Russia.
The only ones the crown owns are mute. Mute and swans mute are not migratory. So Stavros in Skiathos... was
unfortunately not.
Yeah, was yanking our chains, our collective chains. Qualifications?
I go to my local park, sent a breeding pair of swans, returned a couple of years ago, and photograph and take videos of them. And
lovely.
Due to my bit of an hyper interest in them since then. So
I bet you have. What?
Nothing professional, academic, or technical. Just an interest.
Oh, I love birds. I completely understand the appeal. We had one recently, about 4 years ago, and they must have been quite young because it wasn't a very clever thing to do. I live near a canal. And sometimes it's fenced off. Sometimes the boats are like in a quay that's got a coded gate on it, and sometimes they're not.
Yes.
And the bit where behind the coded quay, there's a wall. So they thought they were in quite a safe place, but you could literally just lean over the wall and you were yards, just mere feet above the swan's nest. And we watched the whole period, the whole gestation period. But they didn't come back because it was a slightly bonkers place to nest, given that human beings could literally reach down and pick up an egg if they wanted to. I don't think anyone did because they took the little cygnets to right the way through to maturity. But it's fascinating to watch the whole cycle.
Yes.
And what sort of swans were these ones in the park?
They are mute swans.
They are mute swans. They come back every... They nest in the same place every year, pretty much.
And they stay... Once a breeding pair have a territory, even once that season's young have left, the breeding pair will stay and defend the territory unless they're either chased away or think it's non-viable.
Lovely. Well, great answer, Graham. Have a round of applause.
Oh, thank you very much.
No, you're very welcome. That was lovely. Jay points out that Stavros doesn't have to buy a turkey this Christmas. So if you do find Swan on the menu in a taverna in Skiathos, then you'll know that someone has been listening to Mystery Hour. Mia is in Birmingham. Mia, question or answer?
Answer. Hi, James. How are you doing?
Mate. Very well, mate. What have you got?
It's about the metrication of the road network and why it's not happened, even though we've accepted the currency. Well, it was down to mainly sort of government policy, really. It's the kind of the benefit of sort of lack of perceived need and cost of that, the perceived cost it would take, anyway, to convert all the millions of road signs. And then also public opinion and tradition. It's just the fact that people are very used to seeing that. And obviously subsequent generations have got more and more used to seeing our road network measured in miles and yards.
This is pretty much what I said, Amir.
Yeah.
You've said it with a much more authoritative air than I managed.
I think the government was originally kind of putting in a process in the 70s, early 70s of having it set a certain date to actually go through the process, but I think they indefinitely put it on pause, and that's what's happened since, really.
See, between you and me, and I didn't say anything at the time because I'm very sensitive like that, but I thought Paul was a tiny bit dismissive of my answer I did even say Occam's razor. It must be what I suggested because,
of course,
it makes sense of all the available facts, doesn't it?
Exactly.
So what are your qualifications? What gives you your authoritative air?
I am a landscape architect, but I work in the public sector in terms of design and build for public road network and infrastructure.
And there's no real downside to it, is there, particularly?
No, not really. I mean, people say you have to align it with the rest of the world and the rest of Europe. Exactly. But, I mean, to be honest with you, there's no real negative perception. I mean, I've grown up with it, and I am better able to visualise a mile than I am a kilometre. That's just the way that I am.
Yeah, well, I think of the race, actually. Actually, 1,500 metres, that's about a mile, isn't it, give or take?
Yeah.
So I just think of how many laps it is of a running race, but that's a ridiculous thing. I haven't been near a running track for the best part of 40 years. Have a round of applause, Amir. Lovely stuff.
Thank you. Thank you, James.
Thank you. Bye. I like that. Are we done? Can I squeeze in Peter in Leeds? Can you do it in 14 seconds, Peter?
I'll try. Right. It's conveyed from sensors that only convey itch. They are plumbed in to demyelinate it, that's nerves, without a protein coat. And they go into various parts of your brain, but are not the local.
So there's not like a completely linear relationship between my skin and my brain when I'm itching?
Exactly, and it's not that the...
So it's a bit like a phantom limb. I could feel a phantom limb if I'd had my hand chopped off, and sometimes my hand gets itchy, even though it's been chopped off.
And the itch doesn't move, it's just that you don't quite know where it is.
Qualifications?
I'm medically trained.
That'll do. Have a round of applause. No, that's it. No, we're out of time. Stop talking. What are we going to do now? I've got to give a free ball game to someone. I don't know. I loved everybody this week. From your app store now. Store now.
Yeah.
Oh, Tom Swarbrick's up at 4. Sheila, I haven't scrolled the screen. I can't do everything myself.
It's Sheila. It's so nice to meet you.
Thank you. Sheila Fogarty.
Fogarty. In the original Irish, there's an accent on it, which is why it's a long O, not a short O. If it's a double G, it's Fogarty.
There we go.
Single G, Fogarty.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, James.
Thank you, Sheila.
At 3 today, the Conservatives say you can thank them for the sharp fall in net migration. Yeah, they said that. The government, for its part, is making all forms of immigration tougher. But will we rue the day we got net migration down and perhaps even further down next time around? At 2, people working with poorer struggling families will be here to take your calls. Emma Cantrell of the First Days Charity, a regular guest on the programme, and Megan Meek O'Connor of Save the Children. So get your calls in to them from 2. I'm going to be joined in a few minutes by the Business Secretary, Peter Kyle. He'll explain why so many of you will pay more income tax after the budget yesterday. And my question to him and you is, are middle earners paying for the state pension and welfare rises, whopping rises, that we're going to see over the next few years?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From
Trump Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock. The Prime Minister has told LBC the Chancellor has produced a fair Labour budget. Rachel Reeves revealed £26 billion worth of tax rises, including an extended freeze on income tax thresholds until 2031. She also plans to scrap the two-child benefit cap next April. And Sir Keir Starmer told us fairness is at the heart of all the measures.
Yes, we've asked everybody to make a contribution, but that is so that we can protect our NHS, so that it's there for people when they need it and their families when they need it. Secondly, to put money into our schools so that every child can go as far as their talent will take them. And thirdly, to allow us to bear down on what is, I think, probably the single most important issue for most families, which is the cost of living.
Net migration has fallen to its lowest level since 2021. Figures from the Office for National Statistics show a drop to just over 200,000 in the year to June 2025. That's almost 70% down year on year. Experts say it's mostly down to measures implemented by the Conservatives, such as higher salary thresholds for work visas. But Dr. Minier Koibas from the Migration Observatory predicts numbers will go back up in the near future.
As fewer people are emigrating, that's inevitably going to push up numbers. And visa numbers, the number of people coming in, those have already fallen quite substantially. So there's much less of a space for them to drop further.
More than 270 people are still unaccounted for after a fire in Hong Kong that has killed at least 55 people. Police say the fire may have spread due to unsafe bamboo scaffolding and protective mesh sheets installed by a construction company. Three men have been arrested. A man who threw a six-year-old boy off the Tate Modern has been found guilty of attacking two nurses at Broadmoor Hospital. Jonty Bravery kicked a female nurse in the thigh and clawed the face of another. The 24-year-old was handed a life sentence for hurling a French boy from the gallery's 10th store balcony in 2019. Winds of up to 75 miles per hour could hit parts of northern Scotland later, with people warned of possible disruption. The warning from 4 this afternoon until 11 tomorrow morning covers Orkney, Shetland and the western parts of the Highlands and Argyll and Bute. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 9 points at 96.83. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.14. And LBC weather, rain in the west, some drizzle in the east across England. There will be some sunshine in Scotland and Northern Ireland and a high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Tim Humphrey.
Christmas was a tough time in my family. I became homeless as an adult. I had to turn to a food bank.
This Christmas, your gift to Trussell could help provide emergency food and expert advice. For people like Aaron, it'll be a lifeline.
This Christmas, my dream is that people leave the food bank with hope.
If you can, please give to Trussell today. You can help food banks provide an emergency food parcel and support someone facing hunger this winter. Search Trussell today.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. Inevitably, just a day, less than a day really, after the budget announcement, we are still absorbing the implications of it for all kinds of people. The Prime Minister saying this lunchtime that the decisions announced yesterday will help hundreds of thousands out of poverty, but it will also put hundreds of thousands of people in, if not poverty, then more economic difficulty than they were in the day before. Let's talk to Peter Kyle, Secretary of State for Business and Trade and Labour MP for Hove and Port Slade. Good afternoon to you.
Hi, Sheila. It's great to be back on your show.
Listen, I was looking at some FT analysis this morning, and it puts it like this. So I'll put it to you and you tell me whether you agree with it. People earning around 50,000, so full-time workers on 50,000, which is a very large group of earners, around 70%, will by the end of this parliament, by 2030, be paying 1.5% more income tax. People earning 200,000 will be paying 0.5% more income tax. How is that fair?
Well, we're talking about percentages here, but overall, if you look at the distributional analysis that came out from the OBR yesterday, there is a chart which shows the income scales and the amount that we are asking to contribute, and it is very clear that those with the broadest shoulders are paying more, and in every single decile of the income scale, they
explain
are paying...
Explain what you mean by that. You mean percentage grouping,
every single, yeah, every 10 percentage grouping... when it comes to people's incomes going from low income to the highest of incomes are being asked to pay more than the previous 10%. So that means that the top 1% of income earners are paying vastly the most amount when we're asking to contribute for this. So it is a fair budget, but we've not dodged the question of whether we are asking everybody to contribute in return for the investment in keeping fares down on the rail system, making sure that we can keep prescriptions down, and we will lower people's energy prices by £150. That's just core activity that we're doing to be on people's side when it comes to the cost of daily living in this country. That also has the benefit of keeping inflation down. In fact, those measures will reduce inflation because inflation is not a government policy, but it does eat away at people's ability to make their money go further, and that's what killed them under the Liz Truss and Boris Johnson era. So these are the sorts of things that we are trying to do to lower the cost of living, but we accept we are asking people to pay a bit more.
But a bit more what? A bit more income tax and NI. That's what you're asking them to pay. And I know you're sticking with insisting that the manifesto promise on those has been kept. Strictly speaking, in terms of what's going out of your pay packet, it hasn't.
Well, as I said, we've been really upfront that we are asking people to contribute more. Those who earn more, we're asking to contribute the most.
And so that you accept it's a break of that pledge, do you?
No, it is not a break of the pledge.
Spirit of the pledge?
So look, this means a huge amount to me. You know, because I've been on your show so many times, I came into politics to be upfront with people in the tough times and in good times. Our pledge was to make sure we did not increase the amount of income tax we're asking people to pay, you know, in the headline terms. What we have done is frozen the thresholds. Now, the Tories held the thresholds for 7 years. We are holding the thresholds for 3 years. In this period where we have to fix the fundamentals in our economy, because our economy is not working for people, particularly those people on lower incomes. And there are people, if you think that 70% of people living in poverty or children living in poverty are doing so in families where parents, probably both of them, are working. So the economy is not working and we've got to fix those fundamentals. And we started off in government where the other lot left off. So we've got a lot of fixing to do, as well as a lot of building to do. And we are still in that process of getting the balance right, but we are building now, and people will start seeing growth in the economy. And that is the point at which we can break out of the spiral that we inherited of high tax and low growth.
I spoke to John McDonnell, Labour MP, former Shadow Chancellor, before I came on air, and we'll play that interview out a little later in the programme. In it, he said he was delighted, I'm paraphrasing here now, but he was delighted at the decision on the child benefit cap, that he accepted when I put it at him that it wasn't just a case of political persuasion on that, it was political force that was used by backbenchers against the government on that. And they are going to come back for more. He said, we'll look at their poverty strategy and we'll do a bit more persuading. And, you know, the government's backbench MPs are really going to push, aren't they, in your attempts to reform certainly welfare, but maybe anything?
There's two aspects of that when I listen to you explaining it to me. The first is that all of us in the Labour Party, whether you're a member, whether you're an activist, or whether you're an MP or a cabinet minister, we care about poverty.